Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said.
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be nations, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Isn't that what I just said? What is wrong with you?
Is it the Pelicans? I didn't know it was the Pelicans.
Oh,
I
you're like,
nothing
you're like,
about the word Pelicans.
Yes.
I worked during the fucking day, okay? Well, then what's the point of...
Scott Russo. What would be the point of that?
What's the point of giving the Rockers theme? I don't know! you know what? I'm from now on just going to read. And if you want to comment, be my guest.
Read things that are up to date. How about that?
Just shut up. I'm done. I'm not talking about it.
I don't know what the fuck the Department of Health is.
To do worse than Josh Richard. You belong to me, my sweetheart. I belong to you. You belong to me.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and it's time for the Vintage Vault here on a Monday night. We have weathered the storm, Tropical Storm Nemo, I'm going to call it, even though it wasn't tropical by any means. But I'm going to bring in my Tropical Storm partner, Scott Criscola. Scott, how are you?
JR, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Combined, we could do a little Val Venus joke. You and I got about, what, 65 inches? Oh! Yeah, it was a lot of snow. Many places. Actually, officially, at least here in Connecticut, I don't know what it was in Rhode Island, but here in Connecticut, the town of Hampden, which is actually where my brother, Chris, lives, got 40 and a half inches, which is the high for the state of Connecticut. I don't know what, I'm sure Rhode Island got its share as well.
Fuck ton.
Yeah, fuck ton. I mean, half the high, half of 95 in Connecticut, in the new, you know, Milford through New Haven and up to the start of the fork into the shoreline, still two lanes. Again, another explanation why this state's a stupid piece of shit. I mean, they had the highway closed for, 70-something hours, and the fucking thing is still not totally clean.
Well, the whole thing should be a highway. We've been over this before.
Yeah, it should be. I agree. I'm moving to North Carolina. All right, JR, though, it is always a pleasure to talk to you. Welcome, everyone, to episode 197 of the Place to Be podcast. We are knocking on the door.
It is imminent.
It is imminent. And, hope everyone is safe who lives nearby. Hope you mm-hmm. have no issues. It is, of course, as JR mentioned, it is V squared, and maybe not necessarily a memorable show per se, but for JR and I, kind of a sentimental one.
Mm.
We say goodbye to some of our favorites.
Surrounded by a lot of memorable television episodes.
Oh, absolutely. Like I mentioned to you, this might have been the best Raw stretch mm-hmm. in a long time. But first, let's open the door and.
Hey, what is going on here?
I'll tell you what's going on here. I saw on I think it was Extra, or maybe it might have been TMZ this morning. There was a Lisa Turtle sighting.
Oh, Jesus. Was it in your dream?
No, it was not in my dream. That's most nights. This was actually on a TV show, and I didn't realize she was bipolar, and she's had, weird issues, and so it wasn't just her beauty that vanished. Obviously, her sanity did, too, apparently. So.
I guess so. Well, when you third banana to Kelly Kapowski and Jesse Spano, that's what happened.
Jesse Spano, that is true. There weren't many of the Lisa Turtle fan club. Probably
did you
one.
See that our tubby buddy escaped the Vintage Vault and was on the Today Show and had a showdown with Kelly Kapowski?
I saw that, yes.
She was not happy to see him and his jowls.
his very jowly jowls. For those that watch Mad Men, he was on last season, and he was very jowly. All right. Tonight, though, in the Place to Be podcast, two words that from this day forward will live in infamy from the mouth of the boss.
A champion's reign ends. A master Stone Cold. Screwed Stone Cold. A state of anarchy begins.
You didn't live up to your
I'm not going to live up to mine.
Now, two brothers wage
10, 3, 2, 1.
2, 1.
That's the hotline for the zoo.
Of course, tonight, on the Place to Be podcast, Inside the Vintage Vault, I bring you, we bring you.
Okay. You worked for 10, 10, 3, 2, 1? You presented
I work, yes. I work for 10, 10, 2, 2, 7. It was a 10, 10, 2, 2, 7. A great sitcom.
I think we've talked about it before in here.
What, 2, 2, 7? Yes.
Right.
We bring you
Jack A.
Judgment Day and Raleigh. Oh, no, that was Amen. Sorry. Wrong ex-Jeffersons actor.
Wait, which one? We talked about...
Was it Amen we talked about, or was it
227? Yeah, we talked about Amen. I don't think we talked about
it. It was Amen. Yeah.
You seem like a Jack A kind of guy.
Jack A. Hello. Oh, what was her name? What was Marla Gibbs' name? She used to say it all the time. I forgot what it was. Anyway, she's not on this she's not on this show, so it's okay. Inside the Vintage Vault, we bring you Judgment Day, 1998. And I forget, JR, that what we're about to do tonight, this is almost the real first. Like we've talked about like the firsts of the Attitude Era. We're now what, one, two, three, what, six pay-per-views in of the official Attitude Era. This is really the first one, in my opinion, that really shows the chaos. I mean, this show, leading up to this show and this show itself is just one big, gigantic, entertaining clusterfuck. It's really
Speaking
what it was.
Speaking of entertaining clusterfucks, 227 ran from 85 to 89. Mm-hmm. Actually, 90. 85 to 90. Marla Gibbs was Mary Jenkins. Hal Williams joined her as Lester Jenkins.
I like Lester. He was one of my favorites.
Regina King as Brenda Jenkins.
Yes.
Jack A. Harry as Sandra Clark.
Hello, Mary. That's right, Jack A.
Notable. Here's some notable guest stars: The Temptations, Run DMC, Bobby Brown, Luther Vandross, Gary Coleman, Pee Wee Herman, Sherman Helmsley, Whitman Mayo, whoever the fuck that is, Charlotte
that was,
Ray.
Whitman Mayo was Grady on Sanford and Son.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow, you are up on your 80s and 70s sitcoms.
Soul sitcoms, yes.
Yes. Reginald Vell Johnson, you know who that is?
Yes, that's, what's his name from, was it Day by Day, Step by Step, whatever that
Family
one was.
Family Matters. Cop. Carl Winslow.
The Cop Father, Carl Winslow, yes.
The Cop Father?
Cop Father, yeah, wasn't he a cop?
Yes, the Cop
Father. The Cop Father. And he was also the cop in the first Die Hard, yes. Eating the Twinkies.
Lou Albano, guest starred.
Oh, there we go.
Marvelous Marvin Hagler. Richard Mall, do you know who that is?
That's Bull from Night Court.
Yes, well, you're on fire tonight. Burt Parks?
Burt Parks used to host Miss America pageants.
Holy shit. All right, and two PTV favorites, Leslie Nielsen.
Oh, of course.
And the one and only,
Yes.
Ray Combs.
Oh, okay, there you go. Ray Combs and Lou Albano. There you go. The guy, the WrestleMania 8 announcer and Super Mario, all on the same show.
And the Big Fat Sloppy Pig.
And the Big Fat Sloppy Pig. All right.
I think he married Jack A in that episode.
That's pretty funny. All right. So good show, though, 227. And although, I don't know, Amen might have been better. What do you think, PTB Nation? Amen or 22? I'm sure half of them.
Or 10-10, 3-2-1.
Or 10-10, 3-2-1.
Or 1-8-1-5-3, which is the attendance on this show.
Yes, it is. What's the other one? 10-10?
220.
987?
No.
There's another one, too.
187.
187, 10-10.
No, that's, you know. Murder on an undercover cop.
Somebody be calling Guam at the end of the show. All right. October 18th.
187 on a motherfucking cap.
8675309. October 18th, 1998. Live from Vincent K. McMahon's Midwest Satellite Office. That is, of course, the Rosemont Horizon in Chicago, Illinois. We don't have to give you background. We gave it to you at the last time we were in this building.
Gave it to you hard. That the Jenny number was very close to my phone number growing up.
Really?
Same cadence in the song.
You know what the actual? You know what the phone number is? It's the Buffalo, New York Police Department, and they were not pleased that Tommy Two-Tone stole the number. Yes,
that's
indeed.
Pretty funny.
Yeah.
No, I'm glad he didn't steal mine. I would have got a lot of calls looking for Jenny. Yeah. And I would have thought they were talking about my neighbor, Jenny.
That's right. Was that Big Jim's daughter? No,
no, it was sister of the illustrious WCF referee Josh Capron.
That's right. Yes,
Sir Jenny.
Okay, we will not give you the background of Rosemont. We already did that at the last time we were in this building, which was of course WrestleMania 13. Your attendance, as JR said, 18,153. Good buy rate 0.89. Your announcers, the usuals, the voices of the Attitude Era: good old JR, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler. JR. Our JR. Four big matches on Sunday Night Heat.
Woo, loaded show.
Yes. What do we got?
Steve Blackman defeated Bradshaw with a pump kick. The Oddities, Giant Silva, Kurgan, and Golga defeated Los Pariquas, Jose Estrada, Miguel Perez, and Jesus Castillo. Of course, sans the injured Savio Vega.
Notice Golga got the pin.
Yes, of course.
I really agree with you, JR. I really do think they were lining something up for him.
Yeah, you know, I've been watching some of these Raws, too. And actually, if you go to the Bigelow34ProBoards.com message board, you can find my blog. And I've been doing right in this area here. I think the first one I did was a couple weeks before Judgment Day, and now I'm after it. But I've never really seen these Raws before, Scott, to be honest with you, because, you know, we've talked before. I was just in freshman year of college at this point and kind of acclimating myself. So it was a little bit before I got back into the full Raw flow. And had solid memories of this show. So they're a little spotty. So I'm enjoying watching these almost like it's for the first time. But Golga was focused whenever the Oddities were out. He seemed to always do the majority of the work and often got the pin or, you know, seemed to be the horse of the group. So I think we've been backed up with that claim we've made.
Yes, I agree. Continue, though. More matches. Two more.
Oof. The Godfather used a thrust kick to beat his former stablemate, Farouk. Really on job duty here. Kevin Kelly was in the back slamming his head into a locker.
Yes, pretty much.
And Jeff Jarrett lost to Scorpio with a roll-up. So Jarrett,
yeah,
really
that's pretty weak.
Bit of a free-fall after his whole gimmick change. But as we'll see right after the show, things were looking quite up for him.
Yeah, that's weird, huh? Jarrett eating a pin.
Yeah. Kind of
very strange. Okay, are you ready?
Oh, I'm ready.
Let's get down to business. The brass tacks. We begin our...
shit's expensive.
Our shit's... Yes, it is. I know. Brass, huh? Really? We begin our show.
Oh, you know how Jarrett lost? I'm sorry. I figured something like this. Al Snow interfered. They were kind of feuding.
Yeah. You would think that if Jarrett was going to wrestle on heat, he wasn't going to lose clean. That's pretty sad.
It's weird that him and Snow didn't fight on this show, because they definitely were feuding heading into... you know, they had been teasing it on Raw on and off, and you know, you can see there Snow interferes. So, and Jarrett actually interferes in his match on the pay-per-view. So it's odd they didn't have them fight. It's almost like a pay-per-view out of 1988 or something. Like, save it up for the house show feud or something.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it was very weird. So, speaking of our good friend Al Snow, he opens this show, taking on the first of what will be a couple of very sad, sentimental farewells. We're going to have a few of those tonight, JR. Taking on a guy that you're going to miss because he's one of your boys, one of your favorites during this stretch.
He is my boy. He's the boy.
That is Marvelous Mark Morrow. Time to say farewell. One of the solid mid-carders who have been with us since the, well, I could say since the night of WrestleMania 12. It's when he made his camera debut. Of course, the wild man at the time. Provided many interesting feuds, put on some great matches. But I guess he was kind of getting stale. You know, the whole boxing thing kind of run its course. His feud with Sable kind of ran its course. And really, the influx of new talent, you know.
You know, I know we have that. We mentioned it in our review and before in the past. But watching these Raws again, he was still damn entertaining. And the stuff with Jackie and Sable is still going on. And, you know, I was sad to see him go. I think he did still have some gas left in the tank. I don't think he... was too out of place. Maybe he could have taken a little sabbatical and came back, but I think there was still space for him in the mid-card, at least through 99, when, as we'll see, the mid-card isn't you know, filled with top-flight athletes or anything. So I think he could have hung on another year or so and still been entertaining.
Yes, I agree with that. It's kind of upsetting because he was very funny, and he had a couple. He had some nice pay-per-view moments in 98 when a lot of people thought he was coasting. Mm-hmm. I, one of them. On the 11:30 Raw... which is you know, a little bit further down the line, he challenged the returning jobber to the stars. Should we talk about this now, or do you want to? I guess we should.
Well, we'll get into his return at the next. Well, he makes his return at the next pay per view, but we can just mention him quickly here. We won't get into why he's back.
Yeah, okay. Jobber to the stars, one of the guys from the old days, Dwayne Gill.
Mm-hmm.
Merrill claimed that if he couldn't beat him, he'd retire. Well, of course, he lost. and what started as an angle actually became permanent. He was gone, never came back. You, of course, have your obviously you have the record in front of you, so I won't tell you what I won't ask you what it is. His final pay-per-view record, not counting Rumble losses, 9-7, and if you count them, 9-9, which actually, JR, not that bad.
No, not during this era when we were really starting to get the trading of, you know, losses and wins on the undercard.
Yeah.
And a guy that was really in title feuds, even though he wasn't champion for very long. So yeah, that's a pretty respectable record.
Yeah, he was 0-2 in Rumble matches, of course. He only wrestled in one WrestleMania match, and that was at WrestleMania 14. And that was the earlier in the year. And that was the mixed tag win.
Yep. Yeah, he missed, 12, he debuted. He came in that night. And then 13, he was injured.
He was 0-1 at King of the Ring, 0-2 at SummerSlam, 2-0 at Survivor Series, even though his he was eliminated, his team's won. Of course, we give the win to the team. And 6-4 in other events. He missed almost all of 97,
yep,
except for the first two and the last two shows. I'm trying to remember. Was he at DX?
Yeah, he fought Butterbean.
That's right. He was. He fought Butterbean. So, yeah. So, of the 12 pay-per-views in 1997, he missed 8 of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that ended up, of course, you know, altering the whole gimmick and altering the course of WWF history at that time. So, his final pay-per-view record, 9-9. He batted 500, which is pretty impressive. What? What'd you want him to go? 0-18? You're the one who booked him, dumbass. 9-9. Very respectable. And we'll miss you, Mark Morrow, because, like you said, he seemed like he was kind of working some gas here.
Mm-hmm. I enjoyed him. I liked the shtick. I liked his heel persona. I liked the way he really threw himself into being an asshole when at a time when heels were trying to be cool. I thought he really took it to the next level, just being a dick and fucking with Sable and not being apologetic about it. Just whenever a referee was turned, he'd deck a guy with a low blow, and it was just fantastic, yes. I thought. It was a great heel. And this is actually a rematch from the last one of the last pay-per-views he was on in 97, Final Four, earlier in the year. Marrow defeated Leaf Cassidy, of course, Al Snow's former persona.
Yep, and Marrow at the time was kind of leaning, well, obviously the big rumor was, although it's probably more a fact than rumor, he was slated to have a big heel turn and actually beat Rocky Maivia that following month in this building. To win the Intercontinental title. So he was slated to have a big moment in this building, the Rosemont Horizon, a year and a half earlier. And unfortunately, his knee blew out, and that did not happen. So, bummer. I mentioned in my comments, by the way, follow along with us as always, bigelow34.proboards.com. Mm-hmm. Totally revamped by our friends at Pro Boards. So, you know, take some time and kind of get yourself acclimated to the new machinations of the site. And but it's all still there, including our awesome reviews, which we'll talk about later on. So follow along with us. I mentioned about mid-carders. One thing I will say, JR, that Marrow deserves a lot of credit for is you could have easily put Jarrett in this spot and dumped Marrow on the
And as much as I like Marrow, I don't really understand why they didn't do Snow and Jarrett here. Because knowing what's coming next month, they weren't really going to get a chance. Although I think they do fight there, so maybe that's what they were just building towards. This seems kind of weird that they plucked this out of nowhere. And, you know, we saw that a lot of breakdown, a lot of just random matches between guys, and that continues on this show as well.
Yeah. The match itself is actually not bad. I liked it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of those matches, nothing you had to run out of your way to see, but
no.
If you're watching the show, it's enjoyable enough, just 7 minutes. These guys both knew how to work and both had pretty good chemistry, and it's fine. I mean, I'll always dig heel Marrow, so no complaints out of me.
And one thing I'll say about Marrow is this, and I mentioned it in my comments. He was an up-and-coming guy when he came in. You know, he kind of had a bit of a reputation as being Johnny B. Bad in WCW.
Well, I wouldn't say it's a reputation. I mean, that was truth. He was Johnny
B. Bad.
Well,
it was truth, yeah, but I mean, it was Johnny B. Bad, but, you know, reputation wasn't the right word.
His body slammer around the world won everybody's vote.
Well, he was better than Johnny B. Bad. You know, the Johnny B. Bad. What's the Johnny B. Bad persona followed him around. I'll put it that way. But he was able to kind of shake it off and put forth a good gimmick here. Now, I think he gets a lot of crap because a lot of people that aren't in the know, casual fans, think, well, if he wasn't married to Sable, he would have been fired like a year before. And I think that's a bunch of crap.
It almost knocked the hole right through the bottom of the boat.
Now, he was one of the few that actually had a good valet, but he was just as good as she was, and she was just as good as he was. In this case, a lot of people thought, well, if you didn't have Sable, he'd have no job. And
well, I think there's two things that have buried Marrow in retrospect. One is Mick Foley trashing him in his book pretty badly, because we all know the story. Kevin's told it on the show before, a couple times before, I think. When Marrow came in, Sable was with him in the interview, and Vince was kind of mesmerized and ended up thinking he was a big star, so he gave him a big deal. And, you know, he was making six figures when Mick and these other guys were, or seven, or whatever it is, you know, one more figure than the other guys that came in.
Yeah.
And they all kind of resented him and didn't think he was as good as a worker or as good on the mic or whatever the reasons were. There's a lot of inside jealousy, it seems like. In a retrospect, obviously, Foley's the one that's written the New York Times bestseller, so he's the one with the word on record. And the second reason is because in 2007, and we'll get to all this when it happens, but of course, in the wake of the massive scandal that went down in wrestling and the tragedy, Mero is one of the guys that was just all over all the news shows, really harping on, you know, the state of wrestling and steroid abuse and roid rage. And, you know, he was one of the guys that was churned in and out on these shows and just kind of came across as being a just a bitter dick. That's really what he came across as being at the time, whether he was right or wrong. That's really what, you know, he came off as. So I think that has also kind of clouded people's memories of him.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, he may have also kind of got lapped a bit. Other mid-carders kind of passed him by a bit in late 96, 97, obviously Austin, you know, Helmsley and a couple other guys. So, he was ready for a big push, though, and probably would have been pretty hot in 97. And as usual, as we see with many guys over the coming years, you know, the injury bug just bites at the wrong time.
And the funny thing is, you wonder if it ended his marriage because, I mean, I guess Sable was probably going to break out anyway, but you wonder if that really accelerated her growth, him being gone, and them moving her more into the kind of the sex symbol merchandise pusher that really started to get her over. So, but May was headed that way anyway. May just delayed it.
You think she would have sold more of those jean jackets than your pal there? What's his name?
Barry Dudinsky?
Yeah.
Unlikely. Well, she didn't have any that had the insignia on the back. I mean, you go to the mall, there's nothing on them. Come here, you get a picture of Shawn Michaels in his chaps and his mirror vest.
Oh, yeah. Can't wait to wear that jacket. Jesus. Josh Richard would have worn that jacket.
I mean, that was right on the line. You had Barry Dudinsky, and then Doc Hendricks in the store kind of took over from that.
Yeah, that's true. You know, Josh Richard could wear a jean jacket with himself on the back.
Mm.
That would make sense. All right.
Go to the store.
Go to the store. And so Al Snow wins the match, hits the snowplow, a little over 7 minutes, and farewell on pay-per-view to the marvelous one, Mark Morrow. Speaking of farewell...
Mark Morrow, want to go over it again?
Final record, 9-9. Farewell.
Yeah, so Morrow loses. Final match. Snow moves on, and his push continues. Slowly gaining steam. He's got his little buddies behind him. Got the head going. Got the fans behind him. So,
yeah. Bummer. But...
This combined with the estrogen pills you take normally is going to really bounce
with you. Oh, wow, these heat flashes, let me tell you.
Well, menopause is a bitch.
It is. God,
I think
you'd be
used to it by now.
Did you say Metamucil?
I said menopause.
Oh, menopause. I said Metamucil. I know. You know what? I take that too. No. Yeah.
You got to stay regular.
Yeah, got it. Our next match is a 6-man tag.
On one side is the Disciples of Apocalypse empowering. On the other side is your heart being stomped into the mat.
But!
Smeared with face paint.
As usual.
Spikes.
My heart shined one last time. We're talking, of course, about
They just put you slow dancing with both these men at your high school mixer.
All of us wearing the... they're wearing the red shoulder pads. I'm wearing ones with little white ones, little hearts on. All right. Let's get down to the stats here. This is indeed, of course, the final pay-per-view match for, in my opinion, WWF pay-per-view appearance of the, in my opinion, the greatest tag team to ever step into the ring. That is, of course, Hawk and Animal. Of course, this Hawk and Animal, a shell of the Hawk and Animal that I came to learn to love.
All right, why don't you take a breather? I will go through the fallout here, and then we'll wrap it up.
Yeah, I'll do the stats. I can't read this other stuff, though.
All right, well, the team obviously was quickly falling apart here. Paul Ellering had turned on them, which we've talked about, became Mr. .com, managing the DOA. Draws was added to the group to try and add a little mix a little spice in, add a little youth. Draws was in his regular gear, the little plaid shorts to start. And, of course, then he began wearing the tights and the paint and the spikes and almost becoming an official member. Throughout all this controversy, Hawk began having serious alcohol and drug problems. He'd routinely show up and fall asleep on the apron. One time he threw up in his motorcycle helmet. He would commentate while Animal and Draws were working together as a team. And as the weeks went on, we started seeing more of Animal and Draws as a team with Hawk in their corner. And at one point, if Hawk ever cost them a match, they'd argue, and then Animal and Draws would walk off and leave Hawk behind. So it looked like Animal was starting to kind of be connived into moving on with Draws and leaving Hawk behind. So on the 11-2 Raw, Draws and a recovering Hawk faced off in a match in the ring to settle their issues, battling the Brood. Settle their issues one-on-one. The match started off okay, but entered no contest. The next week, on 11-16, Animal and Draws were battling the Brood when the depressed Hawk suddenly appeared on top of the Titantron, saying he was going to go out in a blaze of glory. Animal, Draws, and even Paul Ellering came out to try and talk Hawk down, but he'd have none of it. Finally, Draws climbed the scaffolding to try and help Hawk, and suddenly Hawk lost his balance and fell off the Titantron. The catch, however, was from different camera angles. It looked like Draws almost pushed Hawk off the video wall. So things were getting a little weird here, and unfortunately, it kind of goes nowhere. Hawk just goes off TV, and they say they're recovering, and we don't see them anymore, and they're gone for a while. But reportedly, there's supposed to be an angle where Draws, along with a debuting character named Vic Grimes, would become Hawk's drug pushers that kept enabling him so Draws could take over his role in the LOD. It would eventually be discovered, and he'd have the LOD reunite and feud with Grimes and Draws, and never really happened because health issues and the Hawk's real-life problems kind of forced them to the sidelines. They'd appear a few more times on and off over the weeks into the new year, with one promo appearance warning of their return in March of 99. The final appearance, which we'll get to, will be in a tag team battle royal before WrestleMania. And they'll make one more appearance in 2003, which we'll get to eventually on Raw as well. And unfortunately, on October 19th, 2003, Hawk tragically passed away in his sleep at the age of 46. All the years of partying hard and steroids finally caught up, and his heart gave out. And it was all over the DVD release, of course, in 2005. Animal will return. We'll get to him when he comes back. But this is the last time we see Hawk on pay-per-view.
Their final pay-per-view record. I'll get into my comments on this storyline in a minute, but their final pay-per-view record is an incredibly impressive, very impressive 13-6.
Mm-hmm.
And that includes, it's 13-7 if you count the one Rumble they were in and neither of them won. 13-6. And what's better? In the big three, we won't even count King of the Ring. In the big four, ready for this? 10-1.
Wow.
1-1 at the Rumble, 3-0 at WrestleMania, 3-0 at SummerSlam, 3-0 at Survivor Series. 10-1 in the big four. So I will say this. For all the pissing and moaning that I did over Vince abusing these guys and treating them like shit and not treating them like the legends they deserve to be, that he obviously did do them right, because on the big stages, if you want to count the one loss at King of the Ring, 10-2, which is still pretty good. So if you count the one in the big five, if you count King of the Ring, 10-2, and 3-4 at everything else. So when it came to brass tacks, Vince treated them exactly as they were treated in the NWA and in the AWA and in Georgia. They were treated like superstars, and that's why they always won. So we'll give them that. Incidentally, there's another final pay-per-view appearance because we don't see any of these guys anymore. this is also the DOA's last pay-per-view appearance.
No, not the same part.
No, sorry, no. Unless it's for you. Oh, Don Harris.
Will we ever see you again? Oh, yeah, we will in a million other fucking incarnations. Yeah. But, final appearance for them. Yep.
Yep. If you count their run as the Blue Brothers, they were never on pay-per-view as the Brothers Grimm.
They should have been. That would have been awesome.
Oh, I had friends. I had a couple of friends who actually loved the Brothers Grimm gimmick.
What? They were around for like 3 weeks on TV. Who are these friends that like the Brothers Grimm?
They did. They enjoyed the Brothers Grimm. Oh, and then
this is why no one can believe anything you say, because you say shit like that. This is clearly not right.
But I remember a friend of mine, Gary, was in high school. He said, yeah, we were in high school. And he said, yeah, I remember the Brothers Grimm.
The fairy tale people or the wrestlers?
Yeah. Anyway, he also wore the Razor Ramon purple, yellow t-shirt, so there goes his credibility. Anyway, the final record was 3-8. 0-2 in Rumbles, 0-2 at WrestleMania, 0-2 at SummerSlam, 0-1 at Survivor Series. So while the LOD went 10-2,
yes,
the Harris brothers went
well deserved.
0-7 in the big matches.
Yeah, well deserved.
Yeah. All right.
So this kind of ends the gang wars as well. Now the DOA is gone, Savio's out, and the Breakers are kind of just farting around, and the nation's pretty much broken up. So that's it. The gang wars kicked off in July 97, and, you know, Kevin Kelly and the three other people that liked it are all sad today.
Wow, sad pay-per-view for Kevin Kelly.
I know.
The gang wars are over. Farouk Jobs out on Heat. I mean, it's a rough night for K-Squared.
All right, there's not much to talk about the match. It doesn't matter because these guys
are
pretty much gone anyway. LOD wins in under 6 minutes.
I'm not just saying this now, but you can ask Dr. G or anybody else that watched in the stretch. I fucking hated this. I hated it.
The feud?
The whole Hawk was drunk and fumbling around and falling asleep.
All right, let me ask you this.
I hated it.
Let me ask you this. Would you have liked it if it wasn't born out of reality? It was born out of love, and I still love him.
Maybe. You know what it is, JR? We were just talking. If this storyline went through the machinations that we talked about earlier. Wow, I used that twice tonight. And
yeah, let's retire it.
Okay. And yeah.
Scott, the Monster Jam's coming to the Dunk. You excited?
Really?
2 weeks.
Wow. For the Monster Jam was LaDante Henton beating Cincinnati. Big win for the Friars.
That's great. I brought my boss. I got him tickets. He's a Cincy alum, him and his wife.
Oh, that was good.
Yeah, that was fun.
Great. I like the way the Friars are playing now. But anyway, we'll talk about that in a few weeks. Another big show coming up in the coming
weeks.
Well,
we won't be talking about it on that show. But
No. That's true. We'll talk more about that in the coming weeks. Anyway, if this feud went through the motions to the end and they came back as, you know, big, badass, hot motherfuckers again and just destroyed draws and destroyed Vic Grimes and just then went out in a blaze, maybe my memory would have been better for it. I don't like the fact that the whole thing ended. He fell off the Titantron or your draws pushed him over. Then we never saw them again. It just was sad.
Well,
I know past their prime. That's not my point.
Yeah, but, you know, watching them again, these Raws, the storyline actually wasn't that bad watching it again. It kind of was a good, like, I don't say good story, but it was logical. Like, Draws was hanging around with them. Hawk starts having these problems. Draws starts slowly making himself more of an LOD member. And you see Animal start to gravitate more towards Draws, and they start walking together, and Hawk is just kind of left alone. I thought they told the story well, whether you like the gimmick or not. I thought it was actually better done than it often is remembered for.
I'm not saying it was executed. I'm not saying it was bad in terms of execution. It was executed well. I just didn't like it. There's a difference. I agree with you that it wasn't. They didn't screw it up. I mean, I understood the story they were telling, and that's fine. I just didn't like it. I didn't like taking advantage of a guy who's down. Now, mind you, in the early stages of the Attitude Era, Vince was still trying to kind of get his feet wet on how I handle these things. How do I handle these kind of storylines? Well, he really does have drug issues, and they're well documented. I mean, I'm not saying it didn't happen. Of course it happened. Hawk did have issues. In fact, one of my next books I'm going to read is the book that Animal wrote.
It's not a completely unproven storyline though. They had done it before Jake in 96. And he was having the real life problems at the time.
Yeah, but he wasn't. Yeah, but you didn't see it on camera. It's not like Jake did wrestle matches drunk. It was
no, I guess not. But they did. I mean, they made it a focal point.
They
had Lawler.
About it,
you know,
it was more. It was cleaner. It was cleaner.
Yeah, Lawler pouring Jack Daniels down his throat.
That's true. But at the same time, you didn't see. Okay, well, I'll tell you this then. You didn't see Jake in the following show start coming to Raw, you know, fucked up and doing like he did at that Hero.
Well, he did that one where he faked it, remember? And then it was just all a ruse. He was fine.
Well, he faked it because he tried to. Yeah, that's different though. Again, he was right. Playing it up. My point is. I think Vince real thought, well, you know, this is the new way of doing things. Maybe, you know, maybe exploiting this will be a good storyline for the viewers. And I don't know. Had it worked out through its conclusion, maybe it would have worked a bit better if there was a conclusion. And they came back as badasses. Took out, you know, draws.
Yeah, of course. But I'm just saying, in retrospect, I don't think it was as bad as it's remembered. I know it goes down as a wrestle crap kind of thing and all that. But and was it befitting of them? I don't know. Probably not. But it was, it was an interesting enough story. I in watching these Raws back, I've actually been enjoying those segments when these guys are on. And it wasn't taking up a lot of TV time, actually, which is funny. It was only taking up maybe 4 to 5 minutes a week at most. It was just their one segment. Either Hawk would be on commentary or in the corner costing the match. And, you know, he played it well enough, whether it was, you know, really going on or not. He played it up. So, you know, kudos to him for going with it, I guess. But obviously things spun out of control quickly after. So,
yeah. So there you go. The end of an era. I saw you with your man, smiling, a coach bag in your hand. I was laying in the coop with my hat turned back. We caught eyes for a moment, and that was that.
You know, Uncle El hosted the Grammys last night. I was hoping he'd sing that song for us.
Yeah, you know. I don't have. It's hard to carry the coach bag anymore. And I won't be walking. And I won't be walking through the Rutgers as much as I used to.
The Grammys and LL Cool J is like the epitome of, like, you can tell it's like that show is completely on a CBS. You know what I mean? Like, they produce it because it's like safe by the book, by the numbers.
Yeah.
You know, he's a very antiseptic host. He just goes through the routine and reads things and doesn't really get edgy at all, which is funny coming from LL Cool J. And then at the end, they did the, I don't know if you watch any of it, they did the tribute to MCA at the end.
Oh, did they? I didn't see it. I heard about it, though. I didn't see it, though. That's cool.
Yeah, it actually wasn't a bad. I watched it all. Megan wanted to watch it, so we watched it all, and it was a pretty good show. I thought had its highlights and lowlights, as most award shows do. But.
Really, yeah, I'm not a big fan of the. On a side note, we're not gonna get into Grammy talk. We don't have Rotella here with his panties on, but I will say that the whole thing about like being conservative in their dress and everything, what I thought was a little bit
well, that backfired anyway. None of them followed it. I mean, Katy Perry was hanging out of her shirt.
Yeah, well, there's another one. It just but their answers were stupid. Like one, I don't know who it was, and I apologize. It was a beautiful black girl. I don't who know what singer she was, but
the
she said,
"Precious."
No, what? And God no. And she's like, "It's all, you know. I know we need to have some class, but it's also about, you know, our personal artistic expression. So artistic expression is your boobs hanging out."
Sure.
That's a terrible answer. In any event.
Well, maybe your world. I don't know.
Well, no. I have no problem.
Oh, that's awful. Katy Perry had her tits hanging out.
No, I didn't say that. But, I mean, artistic expression for your tits hanging out? That's a stupid.
I'm too busy stalking the Legion of Doom, sir.
Katy Perry with shoulder pads. but anyway, I just, the whole thing was funny. But I don't know. What one record of the year or album of the year? Or Donovan Sings the Hits won Album of the Year.
Album of the Year was Mumford & Sons, which is makes perfect sense because they're trying to push them, obviously. Yeah. And one I thought got robbed, and I'm probably going to get laughed off the show for this, but Call Me Maybe did not win Pop Song of the Year. How does it not win Pop Song of the Year? Was everywhere for like the entire year, song. And that is like the epitome of pop song.
Ugh. Thank God it didn't win because I wanted to hear Lumpy Rotella sing it all day at work today, so I'm glad it didn't.
I mean, I don't know how you don't... I can't remember one. I'm going to look it up right now because I was aggravated last day watching it. I don't even care about the singer or the song. I don't know how you don't have that win Best Pop Song. It doesn't make sense to me.
The Grammys were never known for their logic. There was the one year that Metallica was supposed to be a shoo-in to win Metal Album of the Year, and I think Jethro Tull won. So the Grammys, a lot of these...
Adele won. Set Fire... No, wait, hold on.
No, Adele, was it Skyfall?
Set Fire to the Rain, is that it?
Oh, Fire to the Rain. Yeah, that's a good song, too, though.
Come on, though. Better than Call Me Maybe?
Well, I'm not gonna say it was any more popular or less popular than Call Me Maybe, but it's not. It didn't lose to a bad song. It lost to
I'm just saying, to me, that was just the epitome. I don't even know the other song. I don't even know the Adele song. I may if I heard it, but Call Me Maybe, I think everyone heard or knew.
Yeah, no,
to
you
me, that,
you,
that's
you,
the pop song.
You would know the Adele song if you heard it. But I thought it was. I thought you were talking about the Skyfall song.
Yeah, Record of the Year was somebody that I used to know. Album of the Year was Mumford and Sons. Song of the Year was We Are Young, and Fun, one of the best new artists.
Monet Jones and whatever the fuck her name is, getting high in the bathroom or whatever that song says. And then you got the Oscars coming up, and that's also a farce because it's all movies that like nobody goes to see unless you're some weird artistic freak show. Because Skyfall was a fantastic movie, and it won't win anything.
Jay-Z
anyway,
pretty much him and his boys dominated all the rap categories as usual.
Yes. Okay. And then we're on with Kyle later in the week. We'll talk about the halftime show, which we all think at work that what's her name's set blew the circuitry at the Superdome. So.
Well, that doesn't surprise me one bit, because you're all a bunch of big fat sloppy pigs.
All right. Enough of this. Okay. So there you go. Legion of Doom.
Who?
Farewell. Who? Farewell, guys. It's been an honor. Bye. Okay. At least I don't have to worry about dealing with this again because the other one will probably never end, so it's okay.
Hey, guys. Whoa, big gulps, huh? All right. Well, see you later.
That's pretty much how I feel that night. Okay. Hey, guys. Nice win. Oh, see you later. That was the end of that.
Hey, guys. Nice shoulder pads and beautiful eyes. All right, match number three. Christian, who? Defeats Taka Michinoku, what?
Who?
For the light heavyweight title. I stole your thunder on this one. All right, Christian, we saw him actually debut at Breakdown. He was the mysterious man that popped out of the crowd and caused Edge to lose his match. And he was revealed to be Edge's brother, portrayed by Jay Riso. Pretty much starred in the same spot as his friend Edge did. Christian wrestled as Christian Cage in the Thug Life faction, 1997, of the Canadian indie scene. And Edge, of course, was the wonderful Sexton Hardcastle.
Love that name.
And his name came on the spur of the moment from actors Christian Slater and Nicolas Cage. So there you go. He arrived.
Isn't that who Flash wrestled when he was out of the WCF in those alternate promotions? And
Yes. He was part of Thug Life.
Sexton Hardcastle. Yes.
Yeah. So anyway, it's cut from Christian Cage to Christian when he debuted at Breakdown. He was aligned with Gangrel against Edge, and they all were feuding here. So here he gets the title match with Taka, who's had the title for 10 months since, of course, the DX pay-per-view. He defeated Brian Christopher at the end of the tournament. And Christian would have a short-lived reign, but we'll get to that over the next couple shows. So for here, Christian actually wins the light heavyweight title, 8.5 minutes, defeats Taka Michinoku. Weird match, because both heels. It seemed like just a reason to get the belt off Taka finally. He's barely even been defending it. So what do you think of Taka's reign? Disappointed in the end?
Oh, absolutely.
What you expected? What do you think?
No, I was just definitely disappointing because, I mean, they got off such a hot start. I mean, he won it, the big tournament at the end of 97. Then he had, like, what, 4 consecutive pay-per-view title matches, all of it gets very, very game opponents. And then the whole – once Kai and Tai started, then that all went downhill. That all went in the toilet. And the whole Attitude Era started, and then, you know, then the belts started to lose their luster. And those – you know, the lower level titles started to become props. Mm-hmm. Of course, it went right up the ladder to the last belt, but we'll get to that later. So yeah, there's easily a disappointing end for Taka. They were really good matches. You know, he started all the way back at San Jose at the 98 Rumble and defended it at No Way Out of Texas, and of course defended it at WrestleMania 14. And then the Kai and Tai thing started, and that was it. Yeah. He didn't defend the title against any of those guys.
No.
Which made no sense whatsoever. Mans Teo and Togo and all those guys didn't defend the title against any of them. Very weird. Kind of sad because He really brought some, you know, the title started, brought really nice credibility. It's a nice looking belt with the red leather.
Yeah. And they needed to end the reign, though. At this point, if you're going to have the title around, you get it off this guy if you're not going to use it. And he was just becoming, as great as Kaientai was in the ring, unfortunately, they were really just becoming a comedy group. So there's no point in just having the title held hostage there. So you got this new guy, Christian. Why not have him win? And, you know, the only contention I had was this is pretty much his first match. I think it is his first match on TV/pay-per-view, and you have him win the belt. Kind of seemed a little bit hokey, but I guess it puts him over. But you don't really build that aura of earning the title shot at all.
Yes, exactly. And what were they going to do with it at this point is the question. Were they going to make it a legitimate title, or were they going to turn it into another well, attitude prop anyway? So
yeah, we'll get to that in the next couple of months.
But it was very sad because my only contention was the Taka feud with Kaientai was fine before, of course, he, you know, turned heel and joined them. But why couldn't they have gone after his light heavyweight title and, you know, brought it back to Japan and used the title as part of the storyline? There's no problem with that.
Agreed.
They never did.
I think that would have been great if they did that.
Yeah, they never did.
You could add Yamaguchi say they were here not only to get revenge on Taka, but to take the one thing that means anything to him, take his title belt, and they could have all went for it and all had shot. You know, they could have went one by one and made like a gauntlet kind of thing. And
exactly.
And then you end with maybe Togo beating him for the belt. And like you said, they take it back to Japan and Taka's going to go over there and wrestle them for it. Yeah, that could have been great. And it really would have been a good angle and gotten them over. So this is definitely going to be on the list of things to ask Kevin when we get to the second half of 98. You know, why they buried the title like this and, you know, what the thought was putting it on Christian. So.
So there you go. So match, not a bad match. I actually graded a little higher than you did. I enjoyed it. A little over 8.5 minutes. Pretty solid.
Theme on the show, all about, you know, between 7 to 8 minutes or so, all these matches. Yeah. And all so far, inoffensive. Nothing stands out, but nothing really to, you know, you want to rip the tape and throw it against a wall or anything like that. So.
Yeah, exactly. So there you go. Christian, your new World Wrestling Federation light heavyweight champion, and we'll see if that goes anywhere. So, okay. Next up, a storyline that you and I have been talking about that's been kind of interesting, maybe not taken as seriously as we would have liked because we're dealing with two pretty cool characters. We're dealing with Val Venus taking on a guy who, well, their character's bouncing back and forth. He was just plain Dustin Runnels, but he has returned as... Thank you. After fighting a losing battle, you know, the whole preaching to the choir kind of thing and kind of being sort of a mini heel run with this, you know, clean your act gimmick. On the 10-12 Raw, the go home Raw before this show, as Val was in the ring attending to his ankle after he had just lost a match with Ken Shamrock, the familiar music hit, Shattered Dreams Productions. Hit the screen, gold fell from the ceiling, and after being dead since, what?
April, I think.
Yeah, March, mid-April. Goldust returned. He assaulted Val in the ring, polished him off with the Shattered Dreams. Goldust is back, ready to reestablish himself in the title picture after being humiliated for most of 1998. I thought this was nice. Nice, refreshing return. Make Goldust legit again. I kind of compare this, maybe not as big a scale, but I kind of compare it to Mick with all of his various, incarnations. You know, one would get a little stale and you have another one. I mean, he had a lot in his pocket. Same thing here. Goldust was stale at the beginning of the year. Then he tried this other kind of storyline and maybe that kind of ran its course. And for the first time, Val, almost came off his heel after being a face this whole time.
Well, he was a heel when he started, remember?
Yeah.
And then he kind of went face. And, yeah, he's back to being a heel here. The crowd gets behind the return of Goldust. And that Raw was kind of interesting because the week before, he kind of hinted that, you know, Goldust was returning, and they pretty much said it. And then he just comes out the next week, kicks Val in the balls, and walks away. It was just kind of odd. Like, it was almost too obvious. Like, they gave it away. He came out, attacked Val, and left. It was no subtlety or surprise to it whatsoever. So
no.
It's kind of a weird... way they did it. They didn't do any kind of weird, you know, seductive Goldust promo or anything like that. But, you know, this makes sense. You know, this feud and everything that's going on in the comeback. So, well done, I thought. And the match itself is fine. But,
They gave it a little more time than the others, a little over 12 minutes. So,
and Goldust is immediately back over.
Yes. And again, guy that took some time off. And, you know, this is a perfect example. In this case, it's more of a gimmick than the guy himself. But this is an example of how I think it is okay. And I want to talk more about this, JR, on our headline show Wednesday, about taking voluntary days off. Voluntary time off. And how much it helps characters. In this case, it's a gimmick, not a guy. But I'm going to expound on this again on Wednesday with current guys. But it's not a bad thing sometimes to just give guys time off. They don't have to be injured, or you don't have to do storyline injuries. Just, you know.
In this case, it was even just a break from the character.
Yeah, this is just the character. I mean, it's not like Dustin took time off, although at the time, again, I just finished reading his book. He was a fucking pilled up, vodka'd up mess in his real life. But the character just needed a breather. And we talk about, and again, we're going to mention a couple guys, and one guy apparently two guys in particular on SmackDown right now who had took time off, one voluntarily, one involuntarily.
Yeah.
And they are just gangbusters right now, but we'll get more into them on Wednesday. But here's a case where, you know, Goldust, the whole character, you know, remember the whole Luna gimmick with his, you know, the weird underwear and the neon leather and the ball gags and all that other weird shit. And at that point, you're like, all right, I'm just done with this whole concept of him being just some weirdo with makeup. Then you go through this kind of summer thing where he's a Christian or whatever he is. And now he's back to Goldust, and Goldust gets a good pop. And I tell you something, from now throughout the rest of history, it becomes almost one of those endearing characters that you have a place in your heart for, Goldust. You know?
She's just acting real funky.
Well, we always have a place in our heart for him if his hadn't exploded.
I'm going to be serious. Not serious. I'm going to be speak honestly with you at the time. At the time, I was not thrilled to see the Goldust character come back. I was actually kind of bored by it. And I was glad at the time when they dumped it and let him go on as Dustin Runnels. I liked the Preacher stuff. And even if they just kept him as flat, you know, plain old Dustin Runnels, I think it would have worked. So I wasn't thrilled to see Goldust come back. It felt like they gave up on the Dustin thing a little too easily for my taste. Like, they didn't really use him for a couple months because he was rehabbing the knee injury. And then he comes back and he's Dustin doing the Preacher stuff. And then all of a sudden he's, you know, back to being Goldust again. So I don't know. It just seemed like kind of a lame reset to me at the time. And I thought there was more road to hoe with the Dustin character.
Maybe. But obviously, you know, the fans kind of dug Goldust, and maybe could have lasted a little bit longer. Maybe they were kind of pulling the trigger a little too quickly. But in any event, the fans dug it. So, you know, I'm sure there were. I'm sure you're not the only one that has that inkling, that feeling about it. But you know, the crowd was hot for it, and maybe they were trying to make Val more heelish now. But so maybe they wanted to try to find a guy that could pop the crowd, and they did. But this was a very good match. No, nothing great, but it was a good match.
Yeah.
And he gets the win here. Of course, he hits the Shattered Dream, the low blow, again. And he wins the match. So what have you thought about Val in 98 in terms of, like, kind of his success rate? Is this another one of those – you think he's the first example of the whole back and forth thing that we start getting annoyed at over the next, you know, 15 years?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. You know, he was starting to get a run, then he'd lose. And then he kind of builds all up, and then he'd lose. You know, like, almost like they're not quite sure what to do. And this is one of the we obviously will gush over the pros of the Attitude Era. But make no mistake, PTB Nation, mm-hmm. JR and I will definitely give you many of the cons of the Attitude Era. Two of them occurred over the past couple of months. One of them is that the title belts have become nothing more than storyline props. And number two, the building of guys starts to vanish. Now you just see kind of matches with dudes in it, and sometimes they win, sometimes they lose, and some win, some lose more than others. Then they go back and forth, and, well, he's won two, lost two straight weeks. Let's wrestle them again and then have the guy win, and it's just a big mess. And I think that's what's hurt Val throughout a bit of 1998. He kind of settles in 99, but we'll get that. We'll get to that. So Goldust wins.
The hell is this shit? Got chocolate or something?
He needs a Christian uprising. Although, thanks to our boy DDP, things might be working up for him. We'll talk more about that maybe on Wednesday. So Goldust gets the win. All right, our next title match. This has been an awesome feud. This has been a great feud. When we last saw these two, X-Pac was your World Wrestling Federation European champion. However, the night after Breakdown, guess what? D'Lo won it back in his rematch.
Yep, so X-Pac only had a two-week reign.
Two-week reign as champion, but guess what? Now he gets his rematch here. Mm-hmm. And what a great feud.
Yeah, D'Lo repping Milan, Italy tonight.
Yes, awesome. I love this feud, and this is a great match. And this isn't a great match because here's a guy, not X-Pac. X-Pac was already in good shape, but here's a guy, D'Lo Brown, who started a year ago. He was this, you know, chunky, man-boobish accountant that kind of hid in the background of the nation.
Mm-hmm.
This guy worked his ass off
yep.
for almost a year to get himself into wrestling shape, and now a year later, he is an awesome heel. He's the European champion. He's made the belt, and you've said this over and over, JR, and you are absolutely right. He's made this European – he's the first one to really make this European title a real title instead of just, you know, some thing to pass off.
Yeah, and X-Pac going along right with that.
Yeah, exactly. This is a great match. They gave him a good – the other good thing is this was not kind of tossed out there to kill time. They gave him almost 14 and a half minutes, over 14 and a half minutes. And really, they worked great. I'm sorry, Mr. President. Speaking of, oh wait, no, that's not until the next year. Never mind. He would have been very proud of this match. You know, Gorilla, always a big fan of solid mid-card action.
Yes.
And
I agree with you with what you're saying, though. D'Lo really turned up his persona, really turned up the heat in the ring, and really solidified himself as a player. And like you said, really the first guy to make that belt mean something. And this is the first legit feud over the European title that we've had, and it's been nice to see them kind of trade it. See, this is a time where I don't mind the hot potato of the title. You get your lower card belt, and these two guys are evenly matched. They have this good rivalry going on, and they keep beating each other, and I don't think it was a bad use of the hot potato of the title here. It made it seem like they really wanted it, not just like it was bouncing around from guy to guy uselessly. This was like a legit feud over the title where these guys were so evenly matched, they kept just picking up wins over each other. So X-Pac gets the last laugh here in 15 minutes where the X-Factor takes the title. And probably to this point, easily the match of the night, and we'll see as the show goes on, maybe the match of the show. But X-Pac really started to prove his worth as an upper mid-card guy that can just deliver great matches and was really over with the fans. And to me, this was probably the hottest run of his career to this point.
It was. And a guy like D'Lo who just wanted to be part of the team, and just he went from being a nation flunky to really separating himself from some of the other guys in other factions. I mean, mm-hmm. like I said, the Barriquas, they vanished, and you know, and the DOA, they vanished. And here's a guy who was kind of forgotten in the whole gang wars clusterfuck and came back and look at him. He's a shining mid-card star. So congrats to both these guys, particularly to D'Lo. X-Pac is established, but you know, his was more mental because, you know, he kind of got abused and beat up towards the tail end of his run in WCW, and now kind of came back, rejuvenated. His boys are with him. So this is just a great match. I wish this was on a DVD. I don't know what you would put it on, but...
The best of the European title?
Yeah. That would be a great disc. They could make it in the mold of those other the other title belt compilations. You know, the history of the European Championship. Think of all the great... You know, you laugh, JR, but seriously, think of all the great title matches... European title matches we've had. Obviously, the match in Berlin with Owen and Bulldog, really good match. You know, when Hunter had it, he had a couple good matches with Owen, and he got this match. You got the match at SummerSlam with D'Lo and Val. So, I mean, you've had some...
Yeah, that's probably enough.
You actually had together. Some pretty good European title match. I mean, of course, they... And you actually end up... there are actually some decent ones in 1999, too. So, it's funny you laugh at that, but it could be a legit... Maybe not three discs, maybe
right.
two.
Yeah,
I wouldn't make three discs.
Maybe one
be a bit much, but you know, or maybe one with some extra. Maybe a good Blu-ray with some extras on it. Who knows? Anyway,
yeah, that's moving along here.
But so, guess what?
Yeah,
the title changes again.
Yes, X-Pac wins it back.
So X-Pac hits the X Factor, and for the fourth time in 3 months, the title has been bounced around. X-Pac, mm-hmm. who had won it on September 15th, wins it back here. So two title changes.
As yes.
X-Pac, once again, your World Wrestling Federation European champion. Next up, we have another tag, title match. The World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships on the line. The Road Dog, the Badass, the New Age Outlaws, who kind of usurped the LOs. This is kind of the night that the tide turned. Although I was,
do you feel like they've kind of been rudderless though? It seemed like they were kind of, after the Nation stuff ended, they were kind of used as backup or background figures in the Kane, Mankind stuff. They were just kind of there, you know, used as plot devices for that. And since then, haven't really done much of anything. Were they in a six-man at our last show, Breakdown? And then here, and this feud was kind of just tacked on. They were feuding a little bit, but it just seems like they're kind of maybe a victim of having a weak tag division now at this point. It's kind of weakened again, and they seem kind of aimless without a real team to feud with.
Yeah, and but I'd said this to you. We had talked about this back at the Fully Loaded review, Fully Loaded Vault, about how these guys should have been put in that show, but it seemed like as we got into the summertime, the focus was on Stone Cold, Taker, and Rock, Triple H, and then all these other guys just kind of stick him over there. He's got to forward something, and he's got to advance this. He's got to advance that. I had said that all along, and I felt that's how those guys were as well. So your point is totally valid. I mean, we talked about it for the last three or four vaults that they were rudderless. And they had the title match at SummerSlam, and really they were just there to put over the fact that Kane blew off Mankind and Mick got the fucking shit kicked out of him. So I concur with you 100%. They were red hot all year. They were feuding with LOD when LOD still had some juice and kept getting them the best of them, which they deserved. And, kind of helped out as a team with Triple H in the late spring when they were still heels and feuding with Owen. And once the LOD thing ended and the Nation started feuding with DX, then the rudder kind of lost its direction and lost focus. So they had a great run as tag team champions. They haven't lost much, but the problem is, really haven't seen them feud with anybody. You know? Like, Triple H has a feud. Well, now he doesn't. He's hurt. We'll get to that in a minute. Triple H had a feud. He had Rock. X-Pac had a feud. He had D-Lo. So here's the other parts of DX. Yeah, they got the belts, but what the fuck are they doing? You know what I mean? So it is kind of sad that right now the best tag team of the year, clearly, but what do they have to show for it? Why are they the – here's an interesting question, JR. Why were they the best tag team of the year? Just because they held them so long? And I'm not saying that derogatory. I'm saying it because they were kind of going off the rails a little bit. So there's no foundation besides the early – first 5 months of the year – when they were feuding with both the LOD and Cactus and Funk. So since probably what? Late May? They really have had no direction. I think it's gone back even that far, you know?
That was a Francesa-esque rant right there.
As I'm drinking my Diet Coke with no label on it.
I think it was like an 11-minute diatribe on that. That's all we need to say about this match. But
Stoney's calling from Queens. Stoney, you're on a fan.
Jesus Christ. All right. Let's see. so the Headbangers famous New Age Outlaws.
The whole scope of that, JR, is your point. You're correct. That was all for you. You're right. They are rudderless. Oh gosh, imagine the two of them doing a 3-hour Raw. I'm gonna shoot myself. The whole thing was meant to say, you're right. I was just saying, I think it goes back even further than you're thinking.
Yeah.
I think it goes back even to May. Before
I'll go back and listen to this and I'll retort next show.
I'm trying to just faint, trying to psych myself out of the few matches ago and getting
I mean, this feud itself was fine. Let's move on to the match itself. I don't think we need to. I mean, I'm not disbussed on you. It was a good point you made, and I think it sums everything up we're thinking. So, this feud itself, Headbangers actually turned heel on October 5th, Raw. They assaulted the Oddities and the Insane Clown Posse, who had been hanging around the Oddities. Stand with the heel turned the Bangers, were named the number one contenders for the tag titles. And the following week on Raw, the Bangers interfered in a match between the Outlaws and the LOD, bashed Road Dogg in the face with the boombox, caused a no contest, and as DOA had also interfered to attack the Legion of Doom. And on 10-19, the Headbangers appeared with a pair of foam tag team titles and rattled off the Outlaws' opening catchphrases with their own spin on it. Heavy Metal Music is proud to present to you the new World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Champions of the World, Mosh, Thrasher, the Headbangers. And if you're not down that for that, we get two words for you. You suck. So they started pretending to be the tag champions and just kind of mocking the Outlaws. And so the Headbangers, after a lengthy run as faces, are now heels.
Yes. And it's actually a really good match. It starts off a little slow. I didn't think I was surprised when they got, you know, they got almost 14 minutes. That surprised me, but I didn't think they'd get that much.
Well, Headbangers could still go in the ring. I mean, they were still a very good tag team in ring wise.
Right. No, I just didn't think they'd get this much time. But, you know, the crowd was a little flat in the beginning, but they did pick up late. And I'd like to think that this might have rejuvenated Road Dogg and Billy, that they are the best tag team of the year. I think this match rejuvenated them a little bit. Headbangers needed a change of pace. I remember the phone bell thing was funny. I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, I think that you know, the Outlaws needed a good, stable title match. Even though they lost by DQ, who gives a shit. But I think they had a solid title match to kind of get their juice back. So that doesn't surprise me that this turned out to be a good match. And, you know, my opinion, I think the Road Dogg and Billy were back.
Mm-hmm.
It's my opinion. So there you go. The Outlaws retain the titles, but
Headbangers won the match.
Did not win the match. Yes, Headbangers won the match. I don't remember if they get a second match. I'll have to remember.
They are involved with each other, I believe, at our next pay-per-view. We'll get there.
Okay. So there you go. Next up, well, we have a little backstage action, Jared. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
Well, Michael Cole tells us Paul Bearer has been in the locker room of both Kane and The Undertaker.
What?
Yeah, so a little shenanigans going on here with Uncle Paul. Mankind walks in, and we have a conversation with Mr. Sokka, which we'll get to in a moment. Why don't you set up our next match, and then I will spin the yarns of what's been going on with Mr. Mick Foley.
Okay. We have another title match. Wow, all the bell. Fourth title match tonight. The World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship is on the line. Now, I'm about to tell you that this title match did not involve Triple H. What? Triple H, of course, as we mentioned, won that awesome match, the awesome ladder match at SummerSlam. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, candidate for match of the year. But wrecked his knee in the process. So he had to forfeit the title, which is a bummer. Mr. McMahon decided to be placed up for grabs in a one-night tournament. It's the greatest thing ever.
Oh, it was a great episode, too. I just watched it and reviewed it.
Yep, it occurred on the October 12th Raw, the go-home Raw,
mm-hmm.
from the Nassau Coliseum, and it went as follows. Ken Shamrock defeated Steve Blackman, first round. Val Venis defeated Mark Marrow. X-Pac defeated Jeff Jarrett. Mankind defeated Mark Henry. In the semifinals, Shamrock beat Val Venis, and X-Pac defeated Mankind. And in the finals, it was X-Pac against Shamrock. X-Pac, huh? He was getting all these title shots.
And he looked good on that night as well. And the whole stuff with Mankind leading into this was Shamrock had messed his ankle up. And so he was hobbling around a little bit, especially heading into this match already. And they were kind of at each other's throats. And Shamrock on that night was a fucking machine. He was so focused. He said he was going to go out and dominate the tournament and win the title, and that's what he did. He picked every guy apart and won the belt with precision. It was amazing to watch. It really just a one-night reboot of his whole character, and he starts becoming more robotic, more just focused on what's going on in the ring, nothing else. He's very to the point and just picking guys apart in the ring, and it was really awesome. It becomes one of my favorite characters, and he'll start to change his attitude a little bit too over the next couple weeks, but here and then Mankind, again, were having their issues. Mankind also undergoing some character work. He's being transformed from that psychotic weirdo to the lovable, gullible goofball that we talked about over our last couple of shows. In one of the most famous sights in history, the 10-5 Raw, after Undertaker and Kane put Vince in the hospital, which we'll get to in a bit, Mankind decided to pay Vinny a visit in the hospital. A third of the way into the show, we cut live to Vince's hospital room. He's under constant supervision, hooked up to all sorts of ventilation and heart monitors, and of course, he only had a broken leg. Well, all of a sudden, a nurse tells Vince that someone has come to see him, and his heart monitor starts beeping at an alarming rate because he thought it was Steve Austin or Taker or Kane or someone to come see him, but it was just lovable old Mankind. Mick said he wanted to pay Vince a visit to cheer him up. And what followed, of course, was some WWF comedy genius. Foley gives Vince a half-eaten bottle box of chocolates that he said he got hungry on the way and started eating. Some smiley face stickers, balloon, and a blow-up blown-up hospital glove as a balloon. He also claimed that he wasn't alone, and they brought someone who wanted to see Vince as well. Hot monitor goes back up because now he thinks it's Austin again. But he tells Vince to cool down because it isn't a he, it's a she. He brought some good old quality female entertainment, if you know what I mean. She does a trick with a dog you won't believe. So Vince starts to get a little excited, cracks a smile, thinking maybe it's a stripper or one of Matt Rotella's harem of women.
Yes.
But it ends up just being Yerbal the Clown. Yerbal proceeds to make balloon animals for Vince while Mick blows a party kazoo and begins hiding under the bed. Vince starts looking around nervously, asking where Mankind is. All of a sudden, Mankind pops up from under the bed with a terrible-looking sock puppet on his hand. And he does what he called a self-admitted terrible ventriloquist act, dubbed Mr. Sacco. Sacco gets to kiss Vince's injured leg, and Vince finally snaps, throws them all out of the room, and ends with one of the greatest deadpan comments of Vince's career. Adam's apple bobs up and down, snares evilly, Mr. Sacco. Mm-hmm. Of course, the hospital fund did not end there, but we'll get to that later in this review. Yes. So Foley really established now as one of the most over characters. The next night on Raw, Sacco signs started popping up. And Sacco started becoming part of Mick Foley's arsenal. He would, early on, he'd actually take his shoe off. He was wrestling in sneakers at this point. Take his sneaker off and to pull his sock off and use that. And then eventually, of course, he'll start just stuffing it in his pants. But one of the early Raw Pantheon moments, of course, from the Attitude Era was this. One that pretty much everyone has seen and everyone beloves. So, and of course, the Sacco name was Al Snow's brainchild. So,
yeah. And
Vince didn't know it was even coming.
No, and that's on purpose because Mick wanted a genuine reaction. This is one of the seminal moments in the history of the show, and maybe this is one of the seminal moments in the history of the World Wrestling Federation because number one, because this made Raw just the weekly greatest show on the planet, and B, Mick Foley finally get to see the real Mick Foley, who is just a big, you know, lumpy goofball, hilariously funny, great timing, and just, you know, you got a thing with a dog that the way he said it as if it was going to be part of Matt Rotella's VIP room at the club, but and then it's Yerpel the Clown who is in Matt Rotella's VIP room, so yeah, it's just amazing, just great work, you know, it was pretty much. It was almost like the Attitude Era version of Gorilla and Bobby. Vince was Gorilla, and and Mick was Bobby because it was just great straight man, funny man work.
Right, and as we said, Mick becoming the tragic clown that we went over last show, and just a really good character work from him, really starting to turn himself into something compelling after the old, you know, diabolical crazed Mankind thing had kind of faded, and fans weren't really into that kind of stuff, and. Really credit to him for turning things around, recognizing that and changing up instead of trying to force what he had been doing into working. So credit to him, and it really took off.
Yeah. And right now it works perfectly for this match because you're facing a guy who has become a fucking cyborg, and that is Shamrock. And finally, here's another case where a guy needed a makeover. I think it was safe to say that, as a babyface, Kenny was getting kind of soft.
Yes.
He literally needed to become the Terminator. He needed to become a fucking heartless cyborg, and that's what he became. So this was just a great match on so many levels because you're dealing with two guys who, in the span of just a few short weeks, kind of turned the corner and became two incredible characters for themselves, and it worked out well. And, Mick, it was funny that, and the ending is very creative. Kenny puts Mick in the ankle lock, but instead of tapping out, because he didn't want to do that, he's a man's man still. It may be funny, but he's still a man's man. Instead of tapping out, Foley gives himself the mandible claw and passes himself out.
Yeah, I thought it was very smart.
Very creative.
Yeah, definitely very creative, and well booked. I thought it made Shamrock continue to look like a beast, and it played into Mick's ankle injury, so it was well booked on that level as well. Yep. They get a good another match that goes just under 15 minutes. And yeah, I love where Shamrock's going. I love where Mankind's going. And these two were really two of the best characters we have now. And in a sea of them, but two of the best here in late 98, really starting to get themselves over in different ways.
Yes, exactly. So Ken Shamrock retains his newly won World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship. And well deserved for Kenny anyway. You know, he'd been here for what, almost a year and a half now.
Mm-hmm.
And you knew he was due for a title eventually, but I think the character change was even needed before that. I think a babyface Kenny as champion, I don't think would have worked, to be quite honest with you. So good job there. It worked out for everybody. Wow. That was a very very detailed show. A lot of activities. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we have, I won't say a double main event, but two very important matches.
We should be more tired after your Corey Ferreira-esque rant on the New Age Outlaw.
My soliloquy from Dave Meltzer gets 3 3/4.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back, we have our last two matches, both involving very important characters. And, of course, a title match that's got some backstory that, speaking of long soliloquies, get ready for that because we got a lot to talk about. But first, a word from our sponsors. Because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What I'd like to have right now.
Chad, do you ever feel that the world revolves around WWF?
I think you mean WWE there, Barf.
Yeah, whatever, but what about David Crockett?
She likes it!
Well, what about Jimmy Valiant?
I'm gonna get y'all until I get you, Paul Jones. Ooh.
The Four Horsemen.
We are a family, and we are the best.
The Omni, the Dangerous Alliance.
Please welcome the newest members of the Dangerous Alliance, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko.
Jim Cornette and the Midnight Express.
The Fantastics are putting the U.S. Tag Team title on the line against the Midnight Express.
Main events with actual work rate in them.
Woo! 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 All right!
It's just not fair to Flair.
It's not fair for Flair.
If this is what you're looking for, please check out Where the Big Boys Play podcast, the only pure NWA and WCW Supercard podcast out there.
While you were in Hollywood making movies, Thunder Lips, I was winning world titles.
So a guy from across the pond and a dude from the south, Where the Big Boys Play. It's a great podcast. Marv and Chad are awesome. Check them out. Also check out WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Great message board, plenty of topics to browse, the Still Real to Us podcast, and much, much more. Also, our message board, which is awesome, bigelow34.proboards.com. It's where PTB really began. Written reviews and a boatload of them in PTB Nation. We have you to thank for that. Plus the territory wars, a whole lot more. If you want a one-touch spot for our show, you can head there. Also head to Stitcher.com and the Stitcher app for all phones and tablets, and more details on that. Also, our good friend Graham Cawthon at thehistoryofwwe.com, the best research site you will ever find. Also, another sponsor to the show, the Wrestling Forum, TWFnews.com, their wrestling forum, a blog site, much, much more. The guys at TWF creating a wrestling media nation, many blogs, podcasts, and vodcasts. Yours could be included in the official forum of WrestleChat.net and the place to be. We've joined up as well. So check them out. Find out what they're about at TWFnews.com. Also, you can check out our show at GetThePointRadio.com. My good friend Mike, it's a great online radio station. You're not in the mood for wrestling, but you want to listen to music, pop it on. He plays music all day long. But you can also check his archive on iTunes, and all of our shows are there as well. Big site.
I'm the greatest!
Scott Hudson, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast with Scott and Justin.
All right, Nation, we are back going through our review, our vintage vault of Judgment Day 1998. So only a few more shows left here in 1998, Scott. It's been an interesting year in wrestling history, of course, and a big year for the WWF, and we will be finishing this up over the next 2 weeks and then hope to have Kevin Kelly back on to wrap up 98. We have some special guests coming up for these reviews over the next few, so that'll be good as well. So
yep.
Why don't we finish this one up, and then we'll get to all that.
And totally forgot. Great job by Chad and Parv about some of the clips they used. I forgot about the Rick Renzi clip there.
Yes.
Woo, woo, all right.
Yeah, it was good stuff from them, and they are trucking along with their podcast. You can find that on iTunes as well as their website. But they are all the way into 1989 by now. So.
Oh, wow. Oh, excellent.
Chugging along.
Speaking of Rick, tremendous year there. Yeah, definitely check him out.
Yeah, they know their shit. Guys. So, and Chad's a cool dude. He's all over the message board, and Parv is the man as well. So,
yes, he is. So keep listening. When you listen to ours, then you can listen to theirs. Mm-hmm. All right. It is, of course, Judgment Day 1998, as JR mentioned. Next up, only a 5-minute match, but from a storyline perspective, very smart booking. Your match is right now next to Stone Cold, probably the hottest guy on the company right now, getting a huge push from the audience.
Yes.
And that is, of course, The Rock. Taking on Mark Henry of the former Nation. Of course, you know, he got these guys in the Nation many moons ago, and then they turned on him. It definitely is the end.
I don't do any tricks.
It's too late. There's no more gang war, so nobody needs you. Unless you want to start a faction of exterminators. one guy could have a pink polo with a cockroach.
Other
guy could
just jump.
You could do, red polo with a termite. And something like that. The other guy on A&E that kills the gators and the raccoons and stuff like that. So Mark Henry from The Nation was brought in. It was put in this match to take out the big baby face and former Nation member, The Rock. And you look at this on paper, JR, you're like, oh, this is a nothing match. And, just a stepping stone for Rock to continue on and take on, bigger and better things over the coming shows. Is, of course, we have one of the big five coming up next month, of course, Survivor Series. And who knows what was going to happen there.
Yes, your cunt is in the sink.
Is he still around? Where's he been? Obviously, he wasn't doing any weather forecasts for snow. There is a jet stream of bullshit coming out of him, though. So here you think, this is a holdover match, no big deal. But really, expert booking. Yes, folks, Mark Henry wins clean. Beats The Rock with a splash.
I was beyond shocked at this result.
Yeah.
Rock was getting a huge push, super over.
Mm-hmm.
Mark Henry had really never been given any kind of, sustained push at this point. The whole thing going on, which we'll get to over the next couple shows with China, where he was kind of faking that she was interested in him to get under her skin. And she had put the restraining order on him. So very odd. Very odd indeed that he would go over Rock clean here in under 6 minutes, just over five. Really just shocked the hell out of me. I mean, just pins him clean with a splash. And I don't know if the idea was to throw the scent off of where they're going with The Rock or if it was just to really give Henry that last big rub. He had worked over Rock's ribs before. The Nation, as you said, is really just pretty much over. Henry and D'Lo are the only kind of vestiges together at this point. Owen's off on his own, and Rock's off on his own as well, and Godfather are doing his own thing. So, this is a weird, weird match. It was great where they're headed with Rock. The fans, they were listening to the fans. They had turned him face here, and he had his own, struck out on his own. He had ditched the Nation, and I got why Henry and D'Lo were pissed, and they wanted kind of to take Rock out to get back at him for leaving. Just weird. It's an odd choice. I don't know how to explain it other than saying odd choice.
It is an odd choice, but at the same time, we really can't explain it now. It makes more sense. Makes more sense when we talk next month, next week's vault. But from a booking perspective, it was awesome because it kind of threw you off the scent a little bit, and you're like, "Oh, I guess Rock's just a hump," or what are they doing about Mark Henry? Is he going to get a big push? Is he Vince's boy? I mean, or what's going on here? Because it was just so out of left field. So we'll leave it at that. We'll kind of roll with it as a major upset and then kind of roll with it down the line to next week's vault and kind of see why I think this decision was made from a booking perspective. So, Mark Henry, with to this point, easily the biggest win of his career, as he beats The Rock in only a little over 5 minutes clean with a splash. So there you go. All right. Are you ready? Because this is going to take a good amount of time.
PTB Nation, it is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan update.
Vince Kennedy McMahon Jr. here with your Hacksaw Jim Duggan update. He's still healing from cancer. Criscolo, I heard you had a good workout tonight. I sent you a bottle of IcoPro. Did you get it?
Yep, and I finished it, and I was hanging and banging tonight, baby. I was doing lats. I was doing my chest. I was working on my calves. I was banging for you, Vince, all night.
All right. Well, don't work out too hard. I don't want you to lose those tits. They turn me on too much. Now, I heard that your idol, the Pope, retired today.
I finally got to him.
I wanted his gig from day one. I'm heading there now. You think I got a chance?
I think you'd look great with that hat on, I'll tell you. But
you want to come be my right-hand man, my top cardinal?
I will be your Camerlengo, Vince.
Who the fuck is Camerlengo?
That's the job. That's like the right-hand man, the guy that does the...
You know too much about this shit, Criscolo. Shut the fuck up and clean my shoes, you lazy piece of shit. Now tell me about your lats again. I'm going to go sit over here with my pants around my ankles. Go ahead. Suck it! Vince is very ornery tonight.
Oh, I think I got him going with my workout.
You know how to press his buttons.
Fucking Ico Pro. What closet was that buried in the back of?
I think he still uses it.
Well, my gym, I had them put up various old WBF posters. That's why I get myself pumped up and ready to go.
You know? Awesome.
What's that guy that won the two of them? What's his name? Edwards. Eddie Edwards passed. He is, of course, PTB alumni. The hell's his name? The guy that won the two WBF things.
I want to say Eddie DeBartolo, but I know it's not him.
Eddie DeBartolo, who owned the Niners.
Gary Stridham won both.
Thank you, Gary Stridham. Eddie DeBartolo.
Eddie Robinson was the guy you were talking about.
Eddie Robinson was the coach at Grambling.
No,
my
that was
God.
Him, too. He was in the WBF.
Was he really?
It wasn't Eddie Robinson. Stridham, Mike Christian, Barry DeMay, Mike Quinn, Eddie Robinson, Aaron Baker, David Durth.
And no Lou Ferrigno. Bummer. Didn't they try to get Lou Ferrigno?
Yeah, we've been over all this, I think. But yeah, they tried to get Ferrigno, and then he fought it, and then he finally came, and he was supposed to contend for Gary Stridham's championship, but they couldn't reach a deal, and it was scrapped, and I think he was happy. They had the whole thing going on where they were going to blackball anyone who joined the WBF that was led by Ferrigno as well. So I think you can go back to one of our former vaults. Maybe someone, if anyone remembers out there in the nation. I know there's one where we went over like the whole WBF. I feel like we did it with Graham or something.
Yeah, it had to have been. It was probably Survivor Series 92 probably or.
Yeah, it was somewhere in there. Right? I feel like we did a whole thing about it.
Yeah, it had to have been something like that. Okay, so time now for the main event. And wow, I have a lot of shit going on here.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to be able to do all of this. I mean, you know, we've talked about this before. We're not here to review Raws. We'll talk about stuff. But, I mean, you need to just go watch these Raws for yourself. And if you want our review, the written review has all the details. I highly recommend CRZ's reviews. He had them going at this time over at slashwrestling.com. The man, one of the best, the original great reviewer out there.
Yes.
And he has everything in detail. So if you're looking for these Raws, recaps of these Raws in great detail, CRZ has them. I have them on the message board as well now that I'm going through them. And then we have them in our reviews. So we're not going to get into the nuts and bolts. We'll give you the overview. But these are some of the best Raws and some of iconic stuff. So why don't you set the match up, Scott, and then I'll kind of give some of the generalities that were going on.
Okay. Well, of course, at Breakdown, Kane and Undertaker double choke slammed Austin and both pinned him. So, obviously, the World Wrestling Federation Championship was lost. To who? Hell only knows. We have no idea. The next night on Raw, Vince had the world title belt in a case, or in a glass case, and he was about to give it to somebody. We don't know who. And, of course, he was interrupted by Stone Cold Steve Austin. This was at Joe Louis Arena in Detroit. And he infamously drove through the entrance ramp with a Zamboni.
Yep.
Almost ripped the Titantron right off the fucking thing.
Mm-hmm.
He hit the ring, shaking it. He moved it.
Yep.
Got out, of course, jumped Vince, beat the shit out of him, and all that jazz. And cops dragged him away, and they're swearing at each other. I ain't through with you, Vince. I ain't through with you, not yet by a long shot. And they threw him in the car. They're giving each other the finger, and he drives off.
Right. And Vince is all pissed off, so he calls out Taker and Kane. They're in the ring, but he calls him out metaphorically, yeah, saying, you know, you didn't live up to your part of the deal. Austin's attacked me now 3 times this week alone. And basically says, fuck you both. I'm not giving either of you the title. You didn't live up to your end of the bargain. So you're going to have to fight for it, and you're going to fight it Judgment Day on pay-per-view, and the winner will be champion. And because Austin can't, you know, be kept out of his business, he's going to put Austin into their business, and he'll be the guest referee for that match. Taker and Kane were pissed off. So they beat the shit out of Vince in the ring, dragged him outside, and broke apart the stairs, put Vince's leg across the middle of him, and slammed the top half down onto the leg.
Yes.
Vince writhing in pain, screaming and crying. So Vince's leg seemed like to be broken at the hands of Taker and Kane, who have now rebelled against the boss.
Yes.
The next week was the infamous hospital episode. Of course, after Mick Foley was thrown out, Steve Austin did appear, dressed in scrubs, pretending to be a doctor, pummeled Vince in his bed. He slammed his head with a bedpan and, of course, closed the scene out by violating him with an enema. One of the funniest scenes in Raw history.
The greatest sound. Two things I just want to fill in as well. Number one, Vince clarified at the beginning of that Raw segment that Austin will not get a rematch.
Right.
Will not get a rematch. And secondly, probably one of the most iconic sound effects in the history of professional wrestling is that bedpan firing off Vince's head. Vince is punching, Steve is punching Vince's foot, and then all of a sudden you just see him lift it off the ground, boonk, and whack him right in the throat. I watch it, I literally fall on the floor and laugh every time.
Yeah, the noise gets me every time.
Yeah, it's that whole October 5th, mm-hmm, 1998 episode of Raw might be beginning to end one of the greatest Raws ever.
Yeah, well, these three or four surrounding this show are all tremendous. They were really just cranking on all cylinders. So the next week, we had Vince make his triumphant return. Of course, he drives up in his vintage convertible because the show was in New York. It was a short ride from his Greenwich home. And, of course, he gets loaded into the automatic wheelchair, which is just fantastic. Really adds to the evilness of his character, wheeling around in this wheelchair, surrounded by his stooges, Patterson, Briscoe, and Slaughter. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have later in the evening, Austin pulls up with a cement truck and fills the car and ruins it with cement. Yep. Great visual there. Vince let him know that if he didn't call the main event of the pay-per-view fairly, he'd be fired on the spot. Vince was now flanked by a mysterious fellow, joined by a canine protection crew, and the mysterious fellow had a mask and riot gear on. The main event of that show was actually Rock and Austin versus Kane and Undertaker, and ended with the interference of that masked man, who was unmasked to reveal the returning Big Boss Man, Ray Trailer.
God, that was awesome.
Yes.
And awesome.
He looked to be in fantastic shape as well. He really slimmed down since we last saw him in WCW earlier in the year.
Was that just great to have him back, though?
Oh, God. I was
awesome.
Yeah. I was off on Planet Cloud 9, whatever the fuck you want to say. Planet 91.
I was in the, club in Vegas with Rotella. That's how high you were.
Yeah. I was flying high at this point. I was so pumped to see Boss Man back. And he was really pushed big time in this role right out of the gate with Vince being his right-hand security guy, and he makes his presence known here as well. And it's funny because he still wears a ski mask for these first few weeks, even after he had already been unmasked. He goes back to wearing it here at the pay-per-view, and then we'll see over the next couple weeks on Raw. So Vince's stable's really growing. He's got his goons backing him up. He's got his boss man security guard and all his gaggle of lawyers and whatnot. So the power-hungry, power-trip Vince is really starting to kick into second gear here.
Two of the greatest Vince additions in the history of the Mr. McMahon character.
Mm-hmm.
The Big Boss Man and the electronic wheelchair.
Yep.
I mean, guy's a fucking genius, you know? And that would be used in future heel pushes, electronic vehicles to put over bad guys. So, so those Raws and the Raw leading up to that was just fantastic. This match is not great. We've said it over and over again. The more Kane and Undertaker wrestle each other, the worse they get. And that's because, to be quite honest, JR, you're dealing with two guys like them. how can you really make a match different than the ones before? They really don't, you know, I mean, The Undertaker's moveset and his style in the ring is evolving. But Kane, remember, he's only barely there a year, that character. Of course, mm-hmm. Glenn Jacobs, that was other things. But really, in this role, I mean, obviously, you know, this is no Isaac Yankum we're talking about.
Right.
What more could the two of them do to make those matches any different than the ones before? It really can't. You know what I mean?
No, even with Austin in there is the foil, so it's not really
not
enough. I mean, you know, we just saw them, like you said, the month before. We've seen them too many times. And again, like Breakdown, this was just a necessary plot device evil. We had to get through this to get where they wanted to go. Whether we like it or not, whether it's great or not, Breakdown and this main event were just getting us just little exits on the road to what was coming in Survivor Series. So,
right.
You know, as much as this main event sucked, the whole package of WWF this time was so great.
Yes,
they were giving
you
so much entertainment. Were they giving you a lot of great matches? Not really, but the card and the shows were all very entertaining, and it was hard to complain about this kind of stuff
right.
when you were getting the Raws we were getting each week. And yeah, was it this 18 minutes of boredom? Absolutely. But, you know, these were both great characters, and everything made sense, and where they were headed was great. So it's hard to complain too much about it, but I don't think it needed to be 18 minutes. I think you could have tacked on a minute or two to each of the matches earlier in the show for the most part. And, you know, cut this down to 11 or 12. But I get the fact that it was a big main event. You had to have it go a decent length.
Also at this point, you needed Austin in matches.
Yeah.
He's the hot guy right now. Just
well, I think maybe they didn't know what to do with him, though.
Right.
Because, I mean, who do you have him fight here? You can't do another three-way. And
no.
You're not going to stick him like you did with Rock and some, you know, scrub like Mark Henry. So what are you going to do? I mean, this was the best fit for him at this show. You know, kind of like we talked about Taker Fully Loaded. This is kind of similar heading into Survivor Series. I know what you're saying, though. You lose some sizzle in the ring without him wrestling, but I don't know what else you could have done with him.
No, I agree with you. You are kind of stuck. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just saying, yeah, you're kind of fucked here because fans want to see him wrestle. They want to see him obviously win the title, but we're beginning the arc now, and this just gets juicier and better as we go along. But yeah, at this point, though, you want to see Austin doing something. Just being here, but having to see Taker and Kane wrestle each other was just not great. But yeah, but I'm not saying there was no other options. I'm not saying there were any. There weren't any. You're right on that. We're stuck with what we got.
Mm-hmm.
18 minutes.
Right,
there was no need.
Yeah,
I'm sorry. There was no need for that.
No, not at all.
There was no need for that match to be 18.
Well,
minutes.
It's gonna go at least like 14 or 15. I do think that. I mean, it's a big main event. You have a big angle. You can't just go 8 or 9 minutes with this one.
No,
I do
but it could have been like 12, maybe 12 or 13. I don't think it needed to be.
I think it was a necessary evil. I think we had to suffer through it just to get to the good stuff, and we do. So let's get to the end. Austin, of course, both men are knocked out, and Austin discounts three and declares himself the winner, basically flipping the bird to Vince in the process. So Vince, up in a skybox, makes the announcement, Austin, screw you. You're fired. And he drives off with the belt in his limo, and that is all. So, or was that last show? Was that Breakdown when he drove off in the limo? I always get these two mixed up.
Okay. Yeah, that's you don't have it anymore. And he flips in the finger and leaves.
Okay, so he's up in the skybox.
That last up skybox,
Okay, so here he just fires Austin at the end of the show, and we head to Raw, not knowing Austin's future. We'll talk about that when we get to Survivor Series. But for now, Austin's fired, and we still have no world champion. This is a time. The first time in a couple times this year, we kind of saw it No Way Out. We saw it with Fully Loaded for sure. And this show where the pay-per-view was really just in the way. Like we could have accomplished, we didn't need this show to accomplish where we wanted to go. But since it was here, they had to do this. And this is really one where if the pay-per-view didn't exist, they would have been better off. They could have just had the title get stripped to Breakdown and built to being a vacant without having to do another tease here.
Yeah, and I just love all the ancillary stuff here. Vince being in the sky, you know, he was like Ming the Merciless in Flash Gordon, you know, he's just like overseeing the evil that is going on.
Yeah, I mean, the Vince character has been great since April, but this is where he's really starting to amp it up and starting to become overbearing with his power and really maniacal and really pulling the strings and going off the deep end, and that's what makes him so great.
Yes, he is definitely the Reaper of Souls and the Master Puppeteer at the Stage of Fools.
So overall, Scott, a better show than I think it gets credit for. Now, you know, I know our buddy, I think it was Brett that watched it last night, and he was kind of saying it was kind of blah. And yeah, I can see that. It's not anything you're probably rushing to throw back in for match quality purposes. But I do think it's better than Breakdown. I will say that. The main event's dreadfully boring, but the rest of the card is solid enough action and a lot of character development, typical for this era. But really, as always, the heat was on the Raws and heading into the next pay-per-view.
Well, this is the first pay-per-view, JR, really since the era's turned, where I guess the dichotomy is in reverse. Usually we have an undercard that's kind of and an Austin main event that's just awesome. Here, we're in reverse. We have kind of a main event that's really an unwatchable pile of shit. And a really, really good undercard. We had, what, four good title matches?
That was really good. It was solid.
They were solid. I mean, they were not unwatchable. Some of the undercards we've watched so far in 98 have been fairly unwatchable. These weren't. These were good, solid, you know, mid-card pay-per-view matches. Nothing crazy. We had a couple of long. I mean, probably the best of the bunch would have to be X-Pac and D-Lo.
Yeah.
It was probably the best of the bunch. Although Mick and Shamrock was good, too.
Yep.
But definitely D-Lo and X-Pac were the highlights of the title matches. Mm-hmm. And this time you had a main event that was kind of but the main event was nothing more than a – now, I mean, it's weird. We were talking about belts' storyline advancements. Now matches are becoming storyline advancements.
Yeah, really.
Even if they're total piles of garbage. So right now, Stone Cold doesn't have a job. We still don't have a champion. And for the first time since, like we said, since 1992, not really counting that little stretch in 97 after Shawn lost his smile, really for the first time since the end of 91, beginning of 92, we really are in huge world title limbo. For a very long period of time, we're talking 2 months without a champion. Very unusual. So,
all right.
So, yeah, there you are. So there's Judgment Day. No, it's not great. But I mean, I wouldn't mind throwing it in on a day when you have nothing else to do, and you know, at least if you want to pick something specific, at least watch the D'Lo X-Pac match. It's really good. You'd be pleasantly surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe the Mick Shamrock match is pretty good too. But I would skip the main event. It's just bad. All right, you heard from us. Now it's time to indeed hear from you. Feedback time.
All right, I'll kick us off with Chad right Campbell. Ahead. A decent pay-per-view gearing up towards Vince Russo's shining moment at Survivor Series 98. The matches are all filled with decent action that's better overall than Breakdown. The ending of the main event made the fans unhappy and was not very conclusive. In retrospect, Kane and Undertaker is entirely played out at this point as a fresh matchup. Raw surrounding this period is so great and memorable. It's disappointing that WWF has had two bad efforts back-to-back on pay-per-view.
Yes. Jay Hinchy. WWF returns to Chicago as Judgment Day is upon us and only 3 weeks removed from Breakdown. Al Snow and Mark Mero kick things off in a decent opener. Snow gets the win with the snow plow as his popularity continues to rise. Christian makes his pay-per-view debut, challenging Taka Michinoku for the light heavyweight title. I like this match, and it probably should have been what the division was all about overall. Christian wins his first title with a small package countering the Michinoku driver. LOD and Draws take on the DOA and Paul Ellering in the six-man tag, which is not bad. LOD gets the win in their last hurrah on pay-per-view. Val Venus takes on the returning Goldust in a pretty good match. Goldie gets revenge and the win, shattering the big Valboski. D'Lo Brown and X-Pac meet for the European title in another great match between these two. X-Pac once again becomes European champion with an X-Factor catching the champ in midair. New Age Outlaws defend the tag titles against the Headbangers and get by with the skin of their teeth when Road Dogg causes a DQ smashing mosh with a boombox. Ken Shamrock defends his newly won IC title against Mankind after winning the previous Monday on Raw and Triple H handing it to him during Heat. Pretty good match here as well with Shamrock retaining. I forgot about that, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
A pretty good match here as well as Shamrock retaining after Foley applies the mandible claw to himself with well in the ankle lock. Rock takes on former Nation teammate Mark Henry and loses in a pretty big upset thanks to D'Lo. I don't remember D'Lo interfering. Finally, our main event is Undertaker and Kane meet to crown a new WWF champion with Stone Cold, Steve Austin as referee. The match is okay at best with Paul Bearer returning. He turns on Kane and Undertaker smacks Kane with a chair and then leads to Austin stunning Taker and counting both men down. Stone Cold declares himself the winner. Vince comes out firing Austin for not raising a winner's hand. Overall, a better pay-per-view than last month, and we have not seen the last of Steve Austin. And Survivor Series coming up, and we'll talk about that in a moment.
All right, I'll grab the next two. Aaron George, this for me was a pay-per-view full of surprises. Like, surprise, another DOA-LOD match. Not knowing who Christian was and him coming out of nowhere for the light heavyweight title was a bit of a shocker, but I was pleased that I felt Taka was getting stale. Henry beating Rock? Overall, not a bad show, but one that pales in comparison to the build. The image of Vince McMahon sitting in a wheelchair between two attack dogs screaming at Austin about being violated and threatening to fire your ass Sunday will forever be etched in my mind as my favorite moment of their epic feud. And Steve Rogers, I can see the frustration after the show. Yeah, you need the title off Austin in order to play out the storyline heading into November and then the road to WrestleMania, but still, Austin was stripped on September 27th that hasn't been a champion since, and there won't be until mid-November. Typical Russo, using the title about it being an imaginary brass ring. Anyway, nice debut pay-per-view for Christian and X-Pac regaining the Euro title. Bit interesting that they had Henry go over the face, turned Rock in the Nation split match. Granted, the Nation leader needed the blow-off win, but it's interesting that Rocky loses the pay-per-view before Survivor Series. Just to kind of their show overall.
Okay. Sean Taylor. Greetings from the Teacher's Lounge. Love the show and never miss it. Thank you. Judgment Day was really a show revolving around one match, but the undercard was a great exhibit of the great talent the WWF had back then. First up, Al Snow, Mark, no really I could draw without Sable, honestly, Mero. Funny that Jarrett tries to get into the match. They could have had Jarrett versus Mero in a loser leaves town and nobody cares match. Show went gets the win, Snow gets the win. By the way, Snow was hearing voices in his head before somebody else made it cool. Okay. Couldn't find a video to rewatch for LOD 2000 versus DOA, but I can tell you that as a fan since 1988, this was a dark time for LOD and draws was a poor fit. Plus, seeing Paul Ellering managing against LOD is enough to make someone get drunk and find a giant screen to throw yourself from. Christian versus Taka for the light heavyweight title. Good high flyer match. Christian winning in his debut. Edge watches from Stan saying to himself, Taka's a good bad guy, but I bet he would be better if he was evil to a fan next to him or Mark Dindy. Okay. Val Venus loses to Goldust as Dustin reveals it was Goldust that he was referring to. Match was all right. Unfortunately, my fellow Canadian ended up on the losing end, but what do you expect when you're a porn star and your opponent's finishing move is an illegal kick to the Venus? Next is D'Lo versus X-Pac in who has a better hyphenated name match. Well, I think both of these were very talented. Neither really grabbed my attention as far as their characters. X-Pac gets the win while Mark Henry tells China that he's hungry. China would make a note to bring Mark a delicious Sammy Witch. God. Is that coming up? We didn't pass that, right?
No, yeah, it's in December.
Up. Yeah, that's what I thought. Tag belts were on with the Headbangers taking on the second greatest tag team in the Attitude Era, the New Age Outlaws. Somebody else is the first. Well, not yet. Match ends in a DQ when Road Dogg smashes the boombox over Thrasher's head. Do you think Dogg got a bonus from JVC for promoting their JVC kaboombox on pay-per-view? IC belt defended by Shamrock over Mankind in a thrown-out match. I was never a fan of Shamrock, so hearing Mankind say that Shamrock swings a chair like a girl made me laugh. This was a time filler for Mankind, considering how his year would end. Next, The Rock takes on the black hole of charisma, Mark Henry. Has anyone else ever noticed that Mark Henry doesn't wear a cup in the ring, leaving his... Jesus. Sean, are you all right? What are you getting these from? Yeah, try not to see that on SmackDown or whatever. Anyways, Rock loses thanks to Deal's interference. I can't even finish it. It's the main event with Kane versus Undertaker with Stone Cold as the ref. While the match itself wasn't anything to write home about, it was all about the ending. Stone Cold counts both men down, declares himself the winner, which prompts Vince to make good on Fire Austin. Fans who weren't around at that time, I tossed this away as a cheap marketing ploy, but this would be the height of the Monday Night War. There was a real belief that Austin could have actually been fired. Would we see Austin versus Goldberg in a WCW ring? Maybe not, but the following month's programming could lead to one of the greatest pay-per-views in history. The Raws after Judgment Day had some of the best storyline writing of the Attitude Era. You guys should consider doing a Raw-by-Raw breakdown on one of your, geez, wow, on one of your shows.
Yeah, I like that idea. Someday. I don't know if we'll do it now because we have so much stuff scheduled, but I think going back and looking at the Monday Night War could be pretty cool at some point.
That would be that, and I tell you something, that would be a great roundtable with, you know,
Kevin and Scott.
We get both Kevin and Scott on. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay,
absolutely.
We'll work on that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
All right, I'll grab the next couple. Ryan Schmack, all I have to say is screw you, you're fired. What a way to end the Judgment Day pay-per-view. Paul Bearer returns and joins up with Undertaker once again. Goldust returns. Shamrock has a change in attitude. Rock is getting fan support, but not for long, and LOD make their final pay-per-view appearance as a team. I think it's the only time Animal, Hawk, and Draws teamed up together in a match. Bring on Survivor Series. And B.A. Meyer, I wonder if the folks in Chicago felt ripped off that night. This is pretty much a nothing show. Breakdown of Raw pretty much told the story to lead up to Survivor Series. Judgment Day felt more like heat. My opinion is do whatever you can to watch Raw from Breakdown of Survivor Series, but don't bother with this one.
Okay. Corey Ferreira and his match by match. Al Snow versus Mero. Clear here that Mero's on the way out, seeing he loses this match. I know how Snow had come back in September, but Mero had been given a decent push in the middle of the year, and now he's losing on pay-per-view quite a bit. What is this? This is like the Rick Martel. He's losing on pay-per-view quite a bit. He's doing the Rick Martel speak. The match is not a good opener, especially coming after Edge and Owen last month. LOD DOA. Christ, we get another match between these two teams. I guess it's different than the match at Fully Loaded with the Paul Ellering factor, but we still do really need another match between these fucking teams. DOA needs to fuck off for good, and LOD sadly needs to leave also. Christian versus Taka. First title match of the night. Taka finds his way back onto pay-per-view as a singles wrestler for some time. We get our first match from Christian, the mystery man from Breakdown. In a shock, he ends Taka's title run and is crowned the new light heavyweight champion. Great match. Best of the night so far. Rematch from last month's mess, Goldust vs. Val. Runnels has come back as Goldust, and not no weird-ass Goldust, but classic Goldust. The match, once again, is complete shit. Goldust gets his win back. X-Pac versus D'Lo, another great match from these two. I think this is better than Fully Loaded. X-Pac wins a European title, ending D'Lo's reign of representing Europe. Headbangers versus New Age Outlaws. This match is random. What the fuck have the Headbangers done all year, and now they're getting a shot at the tag titles. Match is complete ass, as the Outlaws retain through a DQ win. Another great match between Ken Shamrock and Mankind. The pattern of the show is that all the mid-card title matches have been great, while everything else is just ass. I still find it weird watching the Singh Foley compete for the IC title, but nonetheless, we get a great match, and Shamrock continues his IC run. Mark Henry versus Rock. This is the worst thing on this show. Mark Henry beats The Rock. Honestly, what the fuck? Rock is the second most over face in WWF behind Austin, and they beat him to a guy who has missed over a year through injury for no reason. The match is fucking awful. Kane versus Undertaker. God, this is bad. These two guys' matches really got worse as the year went on. Austin is the highlight as the ref. So we get Austin getting the pin and somehow becoming the champion because he said he is. Another cliffhanger ending to a pay-per-view to build up another epic Raw on Monday. Overall, this show is one of them shows, which is mainly awful, but has three really good matches. I don't think the three matches are enough to make the show a thumbs up. Here is Mr. Meltzer's numbers. Snow Marrow, 1.5. LODDOA, half. Christian Taka, 3. Goldust Val, 1.5. Or as he said, Van Venus. X-Pac D'Lo, 3.5. Headbangers NAO, 1.25. Shamrock Mankind, 3.25. Henry Rock, half star. And Taker Kane, -1.5.
Ryan Everett, love the Vintage Vault. Been listening to an order up to SummerSlam 92, but had to chime in on this one, as was the first pay-per-view I attended live after years of just house shows. As usual, my dad, a casual observer at best, would get lost on our drive from the far southwest side of the city to Rosemont and ended up needing directions, which resulted in my dad swearing about how the WWF should hold the shows at the United Center. With that intro out of the way, this is not a good show. Opener's crap, as Merrow is heatless as it could be from June of 98 if Sable was involved, although snow keeps getting hotter. LODDOA really pissed me off because I thought they should have given the LOD one last shot at the tag title since this is Chicago. It would have maybe mailed to get hot one more time. Instead, we get the same boring-ass match. We get it over the edge and Fully Loaded. Christian Taco is pretty good, even though it came out of nowhere. Goldust returns cool, but the match itself felt like a waste of time. X-Pac D'Lo, probably the match of the night, on par with a lot of the matches they had around this time. Both were moving up the mid-card totem pole. As I said, I think they should have LOD challenge for the tag titles here and just scrap DOA and Headbangers from the card. And let Outlaws and LOD have a crazy brawl like they had the street fight at WrestleMania 13. Shamrock Mankind always pissed me off as a huge Foley mark, but it's a pretty stiff and rough match. Mark Henry defeating The Rock really pissed off the crowd, I remember, and that's all I actually remember about that. Main event continues the downward trend in matches between Taker and Kane, and the main event sucks a big one. Austin as referee keeps it somewhat interesting, and the show ended with the classic Vince, screw you, you're fired. Overall, the show's pretty crappy from a match standpoint, but the main angle's done well, and Mankind and Rock are clearly in a holding pattern. This show gets a pass for me on the WrestleMania 1 precedent, where the historical value overshadows the actual quality. Glad I got to go to WrestleMania 22, 23, and Money in the Bank 11 to add some teeth to my pay-per-view appearances. Great show. Great job. Love the shows. Thank you, Ryan. Mm-hmm.
Steve Willey, my friend and I drove down last minute to the show. Our seats were so bad, we were literally above and behind the Titantron. Sounds like gym seats. As I told, as he told you on the Facebook chats page. He remembers virtually nothing about this show, and the previous show reviews remind him why. Enjoying seeing the huge influx of young talent, including the Hardys and single squash matches, the really great Taka Christian match test, and a bunch of guys, yes. Guys we haven't talked about yet. Mm-hmm. He went with another friend to Raw the next night, and he recalls another future star of the wrestling business that has never been in WWF, mm-hmm. being in a dark tag team match.
Yes. Fallen Angel.
Who that is down there. Yes. Fallen Angel.
Dave Hall wraps us up. This must be one of the only events that people would have paid just to see a referee. This was a mixed bag of a show. Al Snow and Mark Merrow was a bit of a dull starter, and then it was followed by another segment of the world's worst feud. Taka and Shinoko finally defends the light heavyweight title again and loses to Christian in our first decent match. They really should have opened the pay-per-view with that one. Goldust returns to the ring, defeats Val following the debut of Shattered Dreams. I always liked this match for some reason, probably because it was so different than the previous month's match. X-Pac D'Lo have a fairly good bout, but it was sadly followed by an underwhelming tag title match. I was surprised that Outlaws and the Headbangers did not have better chemistry. Mankind has another outstanding match, this time with Shamrock, as Mankind submits himself in a funny yet cool moment. Rock drags a semi-decent match out of Mark Henry. Finally, Austin seals the main event with a great referee performance, which was needed, seeming that Taker and Kane probably had the worst match of the year. Or their worst match of the year. Final moments were fantastic as Austin declares himself the winner and dares Vince to fire him, which Vince gladly does. Some good moments mixed with some bad, but the build of Austin McMahon is outstanding. So there you go. That is our review of Judgment Day 98 in the vault. We can close that back up. And Scott, coming up later this week, we have headlines.
Yes.
Wednesday night, we'll be joined by a plethora of gentlemen. We have Jordan Duncan to do Half-Baked Ideas. We have Kyle Forchetti to talk Super Bowl and NFL offseason. And we have Jay Womet to give us a health update and talk about 2CW.
Yes.
Plus, we'll be doing the breakdown. You have your blog going on, your review of Raw, SmackDown, Main Event, and Impact each week. We're going to break down each of those shows. A little bit of a new format for the headlines.
Yep.
We'll give our Elimination Chamber preview and as well as the news from WrestleChat.net as well.
Yes. Busy show. Wow.
Yeah, definitely. And, of course, next week we have Survivor Series 98, Jay Hinchey. We'll cash in his trivia prize.
Yep.
Speaking of that, we got to start planning this year, Scott. It's going to come in fast.
Boy. Oh, boy. Ready for those 3 o'clock in the morning overseas.
Yes.
And make sure the questions are all right. And
yeah, look forward again June, July-ish. We're going to start planning soon, and we'll start collecting coming up with questions and collecting the contenders again this year. So it should be a lot of fun. So Jay will cash in that prize next Tuesday night with Survivor Series 98, and then next Wednesday, Scott.
It's finally here.
Episode 200. I put up a reminder on the Facebook page. If you haven't gotten your audio clips in yet, do so. I've already gotten a good little mix. I'm going to put those together into a segment and play all those on the air. So you can congratulate us. You can roast us. You can plug stuff. You can talk about whatever you want. Keep it up maybe under 2 minutes or so at the most. You can record those and send them over to our placetobepodcast@gmail.com account. Mm-hmm. Other than that, we are good. You can visit us at placetobepodcast.podbean.com, bigelow34.proboards.com, on Facebook, at Twitter, Place Number 2B Podcast as well. Live chat page has been hopping too. We're going to do it. I'm going to start like a nightly open chat thread. We had one last night. We had a good couple hundred comments in there. A lot of fun just bullshitting on what we were watching. A handful of us on that. And then, of course, the Raw chat tonight hopping, as always, are up in the 300s for comments. So get involved. Scott Hudson's in the live chat Facebook page. Can you believe that, Scott? He's in there just bullshitting with us.
That is awesome. You know, we also have a new thing for those that I think I mentioned it earlier. The Pro Boards website's kind of revamped now, and they have that flame thread at the bottom where people are just kind of chatting randomly.
Yeah, it's like a little chat room.
Yeah, so we got that as well.
Yeah, that's cool. And the tournaments are ongoing. You can get in on the finals of the tag team tournament, and of course the third round of the theme song tournament's ongoing as well. So make sure you join us there. So let's wrap up, Scott. Visit both our blogs at the message board as well. So for Scott Criscolo, I am Justin Rosero. We will talk to you Wednesday night with the headlines previewing Elimination Chamber.
It's just looking at my lats.
Speaking of elimination, Scott, I am starting a club for people who can't ejaculate.
You are.
Let me know if you can't come.
Who the hell wrote that for you?
Money in the bag, banker look like a drag. I want to play with pelicans from here to Baghdad. Gun blast, think fast, I think I'm hit. My girl pinched my hips to see if I still exist. I think not, I'll send a letter to my friends. A born again, a hooligan, only to be king again. Ready or not, here I come, you can't hide. Gonna find you and take it slow. You're not, here I come, you can't hide, gonna find you, and make you want me. I play my enemies like a game of chess, where I rest, no stress if you don't smoke cess, less, I must confess, my destiny's manifest, in some vortex and sweats, I make tracks like I'm homeless. Rap orgies with Borgie and Bess. Capture your bounty like Elliot Ness. Yes, bless you if you represent the fool. But I hex you with some witch's brew if you do do. Voodoo, I could do what you do. Easy. Believe me, frontin' niggas give me heebie-jeebies. So why you imitating Al Capone? I be Nina Simone and defecating on your microphone. Ready or not, here I come. You can't hide. Gonna find you. Take it slowly. You can't run away from these stars I got. Oh, baby, hey, baby, 'cause I got a lot. Oh, yeah. Anywhere you go, my whole crew gonna know. Oh, baby, hey, baby, you can't hide from the bag. Oh, no. Ready or not, refugees taking over. The Buffalo Soldier, dreadlock roster. On the 12th hour, fly by in my bomber. Crews run for cover, now they under pushing up flowers. Super fly, true lies, do or die. Toss me high on
Starting to fly with my boo from Lakai. I refugee from Guantanamo Bay. Dance around the border like I'm Cassius Clay.
Ready or not, yeah. Here I come. You can't hide.
Hey, yo, no.